right? All right.
Talk to you.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everyone. Sorry for the little technical difficulties we had earlier. I'll take blame for that. Hope everybody's doing well tonight. Going to get into some scripture here right off. I want to go into the book of Psalms, chapter 83. And just want to get into some truth tonight, just to feed us, feed our spirits, understand what our ancient brethren went through is exactly what we're going through today, and that their enemies that they had back then are the same enemy that we have today, and that the strategy of their enemies were really no different than the strategy of our enemies in our current situation. So I just want to give thanks to Yahweh for His word. That it's so edifying, so educational to us, and just feeds our spirit, puts us in a knowledgeable situation that what we're going through is exactly what we should be going through, what we deserve to be going through, and that Yahweh's with us in this. Let me read a little bit out of the book of Psalms, chapter 83. Keep not thou silence, O Elohim, hold not thy peace. Be not still, O El, for lo, thine enemies make a tumult. And they that hate thee have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. The tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes. I'm going to skip down to verse 12. Who said, let us take to ourselves the houses of Elohim in possession. O my Elohim, make them like a wheel, as the stubble before the wind. As the fire burneth the wood, and as the flame setteth the mountains on fire. So persecute them with thy tempest, and make them afraid with thy storm. Fill their faces with shame, that they may seek thy name, O Yahweh. Let them be confounded and troubled forever. Yea, let them be put to shame and perish, that men may know that thou, whose name alone is Yahweh, art the Elohim over all the earth. Praise Yahweh for his word. So much truth, so much two seed line truth in this psalm. Bill, I guess you're the one that's going to have to buzz people in that will call in. Apparently, you have the magic button there, and I'm just in as a caller. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but it'll unmute them automatically. I got it set up.
All right. Well, folks, I'm in as Greg tonight. Bill, thanks for walking us through this thing. But anyway, good to see everybody for another Tuesday night. And let me just minimize my chat room here a little bit. I got about four or five windows open here. I need another screen here. I can see that. But looking at this psalm, so much truth in here for our current situation. Verse 2 is exactly where we are right now today. The enemies of Yahweh are making a tumult. And they that hate Yahweh have lifted up the head. And our world today is filled with haters of Yahweh. And our enemies are haters of Yahweh. And in hating Yahweh, they hate us. And they have evil designs upon us and the holy seed line, the seed line of the 12 tribes of Israel that Yahweh has preserved down through the generations to this very day. And Yahweh is calling out more and more of his people, his Anglo-Saxon people, the true descendants of the 12 tribes. More and more of our brethren are waking up today to understand who they are in this world and casting off the deception and the brainwashing and the lies that have been put upon our people, more so in the last 50, 60 years than in any generation that's ever lived. In ancient times, our people at least knew who they were. They were being persecuted, but they knew who they were in this world.
Well, that's part of what I like to say about the psalm. I don't mean to cut you off, but
no,
what
in.
Application does this psalm have in David's time where it talks about the hidden ones of Yahweh? it really doesn't have any.
Yeah, not much. They knew who they were.
Well,
you know,
it shows that this is a song applicable to the future time or to a different time other than David is actually writing in, since he is a prophet and recognized as a prophet by the apostles.
Right. Well, that's an excellent point, Bill. You know, I mean, 99.9% of the Anglo-Saxon people today on this planet really have no concept that they are descended from the 12 tribes of Jacob Israel.
And that leads me to another facet of this psalm. What application does the term thy hidden ones have to do in relationship to the Jews?
Yeah, exactly.
None whatsoever.
You know, I mean, I believe, and I know you agree with me, that the Psalms are just filled with clear teaching of two seed line Christian Israel identity. I mean, you see the two seed line in this psalm so clearly. I mean, this verse alone, you have a group of people taking crafty counsel against the people of Yahweh, and they're labeled
who
as enemy.
Who might they be?
Eskimos? Oh, yeah, I think it's safe to say that we're talking about Edomite Jews here.
And they were basically the same, you know, they're the descendants of the Kenites that were taking counsel against the children of Israel 3,000 years ago. They're the same people.
Certainly. Descended directly from Cain and even traceable back to fallen angels, you know, who mated with human women. And hence the seed line that has hated Yahweh from that time to the current time of us right here tonight. There's a group of people, and people with quotation marks around that term people, we'll call them beings, two-legged beings, that they hate Yahweh, and therefore they hate the people of Yahweh. They hate Yahweh's holy seed line because they know that Yahweh has set up this world for his seed line. And they know that eternal judgment awaits them somewhere down the road. And in the meantime, they want to kill and destroy and bring as much destruction upon Yahweh's holy seed line on this earth as they can. And these verses make it very clear. Verse 3, they have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come, and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. And verse 5, it says it as clear as any verse to me in the entire Bible. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. And I think it's safe to say that there's no group of people more organized than the Jew in this world. Just a quick cursory look at Jewish organizations will show you page after page after page of Jew organizations. They are the most confederate people probably that's ever been. I mean, you know, even though I love to be in the Anglo-Saxon race, half the time we can't even get along with ourselves, you know. Someday, apparently, we're going to get along quite well. But now, you know, you get 15 or 20 of us together, usually we end up in an argument over something. But these creatures, they consult together with one consent, and that one consent is that they want to cut off the name of Israel, that it may be no more in remembrance. Folks, there's your enmity prophesied in Genesis 3:15, that there would be hatred by the seed of the serpent toward the seed of the woman. And this is just that being lived out day by day by these people as they confederate against us, as they consult together with one consent that our name, the name of Israel, and I like to substitute when I say the name of Israel in these verses, just plug into that the Anglo-Saxon race, that the Anglo-Saxon race may be no more in remembrance. That's what in reality that they're trying to do. And as a further slap in the face when they founded their false nation in 1948. Look at the name they took for that nation. When I was trained in theology as a minister, we were taught that that was one of the greatest fulfillments of prophecy that there had ever been. And now that Yahweh has been merciful to me and shown me many things, I see now that that was one of the most satanic things that has ever taken place in history. Not only that they stole that land, and not only was massive bribery and subterfuge and deception involved in that, wars even being fought to bring that to pass, false wars, wars that never should have been fought, pitting white brethren of the United States against our white brethren in Germany, a war that never should have happened, all so they could steal that land, that name. This is the result of consulting together with one consent and being confederate against the people in the seat of Yahweh. We have a great organized enemy against our race. And yet, interestingly enough, most of our race has no idea that they're even in a conflict, that they even have an enemy. You know, I wonder, out of every 1,000 Anglo-Saxons, if you ask them, is the Jew your enemy? How many would say yes? I would guess one, two, maybe. I don't know, maybe that's a generous assessment. Well, what do you think on that, Bill?
Well, it's sad, but they who deny the Christ, that Yahshua is the Christ, they are the Antichrist. So therefore, they should be the enemies of all Christians. And we've been in bed with our enemies for 300-400 years now.
Yeah.
And we're totally deceived by them now.
Totally deceived.
And yeah. As you know, Greg, being in the ministry, they teach that it's everything spiritual, that it's a spiritual enemy that they were fighting, not the actual, which it is, but they, I mean, I'm coming from a Baptist perspective.
That was my training. Mm-hmm.
They don't point at it and go, it's the Jews. They try to make it out to be in other spiritual things that they make up to be spiritual things.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. And for years and years and years, I have been and still am a student of the worldwide, I hate to use the term conspiracy, but it's such a perfect term, the worldwide conspiracy. And, you know, there's tons of teaching out there on it that is not Christian Christian identity two seed line. And the majority of it never identifies the Jew. They point all around it. They
yeah.
point, you know, pointers yeah. everywhere, but they never name it as the Jews. And
when,
it's crystal clear who it is.
When you got into ministry, did other pastors come to you and say you need to read and study this guy and this guy and this guy, and did they do that?
Quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah,
and I was fairly open. I by no means thought I knew a whole lot. I realized I was on a path of learning, you know, and so I was open. But
like McGee and all those others.
Yeah, I was a student, you know. Even after I got my degree, I realized that I got a lot to learn, and I figured it would be a lifetime journey, and it certainly has turned out to be that way. But until Yahweh opened my eyes to really show me two seed line Christian Israel identity, I understood very little now looking back.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was like monkey see, monkey do, parrot the systematic theology points, but if you asked me to really break them down and understand them, I probably wouldn't have had a whole lot to say. You know, but until you understand, until believers really see who the enemy is, who the Jew is, and what is the origin of the Jew. You know, and again, that's why I'm a bit of a fanatic on the Book of Enoch.
Oh, yeah.
And why I'm positive that the Book of Enoch was kept out of the Bible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It shows the true origin of the enemies of Yahweh. It was from the loins of the fallen angels.
And the only clue that they left us was Jude, verse 14. That's it.
Yeah,
well, actually a whole section of Jude is quoted from Enoch.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's tons of actual quotes from Enoch throughout the New Testament. Some are more direct than others, but when you read through the Book of Enoch, all the time you read verses that really will ring a bell that you've seen that verse somewhere else in the New Testament. You know, not even necessarily word for word, but certainly close and alluded
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Which, when we were, before we recorded, There was the gentleman who was asking about where to, I guess basically he was asking where to get a copy of the Book of Enoch, and is that right?
Yes.
And you can go to qbible.com has got it, or you can.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Q as in quiz. Q Bible, altogether one word, no spaces, qbible.com, which I think Bill has got it. Yeah, Bill's got a link to it. Clifton's got a link to it.
Yeah, right. qbible.com has the Book of Enoch posted there, and it's in other places on the web. According to my notes, Jude verses 4 through 12 are taken from 1 Enoch 15, 1 to 10, and 1 Enoch 16. Jude verse 6 is comparable to 1 Enoch 53 and according to DNA 27 to Enoch 12:4 and Enoch 10:6, but that's the Oxford verse numbers and not the Charles's. And Jude 14 is taken from 1 Enoch chapter 2 or according to DNA 27 from 1 Enoch 1:9. So that's a considerable portion of Jude is taken right from the Book of Enoch.
Yeah. I wanted
and
to.
And there's, you know, I'm sorry, Greg. There's many allusions to Enoch in Paul, and also there's some direct references in Peter.
And also, you can Google the Book of Enoch, and it's free. You can find it free. I found it two different places free on the web by doing that.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, one of my projects over the next year or two will be to translate the Greek fragments of Enoch. I just have a lot on my plate.
Which I also found the Book of Jasher that way, too, by Googling it. It's free on the Internet.
By the way, I wanted to finish one thought here, maybe two thoughts from this psalm, just to wrap up this psalm before we maybe move on to something else. But I just... Verse 5 to me is the epitome of worldwide Jewry today, where it says, "For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee," meaning Yahweh, "and against the hidden ones of Yahweh," which is us. And how interesting that this has crossed thousands of years, and the situation is still the same today. You know, and we live in the last 50, 60, 70 years, we have seen profound hatred poured out from them and fury toward our race. And I just, every day I consider the tens of millions of our racial brethren that were slaughtered by the Jews in Russia and Eastern Europe back in the 1920s and 30s with the so-called Bolshevik Revolution, Bolsheviks, of course, being Jews. And truly, they have consulted together with one consent, and truly, they are confederate against thee, against Yahweh, and against his people. And, you know, I just believe it's critical that we see that, and Yahweh, I mean, like I said, folks, who else sees this but us, really? You know, most people, most Christians, if you show them these verses, they would look at them in a strictly historical context. And they would go, oh, you know, look, David breaks it down, the tabernacles of Edom, oh, the Edomites, the Ishmaelites, the Moabites, those, you know, those ancient tribes, they were the enemy of God's people. Of course, they would think that was Jews. And they would view this as a history lesson, and that's how I was taught. But now, seeing what we see in two seed line Israel identity, I realize this is like written today for us. That there's a group of people right now that are consulting together with one consent, and that's our enemy, and they are confederate against Yahweh's people. And do we not see this constantly, even currently? You know, certainly in our lifetime, we've seen this in our history. When we see them closing down and shutting down and flooding white nations with alien races, doing everything they can to shut down white families and bring degenerate filth against white children and destroying us from multiple angles. Are you trying to, do we not see that they have consulted together with one consent even now in our lifetime, and they are confederate against us currently? There's no doubt whatsoever. Perhaps now they're more organized in this effort than at any time in history, because they have technology now and millennia of experience in how to attack us. And they've actually put our precious race to sleep with decades of brainwashing and mind control and education control and media control. I mean, it's a miracle any of us see any of this. Praise Yahweh for that. That they can't overcome Yahweh.
Have you ever seen some of those Germanic women in the films from Germany?
I have, yes.
Speaking about the, I think it was the Cruise for Joy, or Joy Cruise, or I forget. But it was a program in Germany where they had offered all of the soldiers and working men of Germany, of Judah, to go on a cruise. And they had a German woman. I mean, these people, you can see the light of Christ shining through their lives. I mean, these are beautiful people. Absolutely. And I just stepped into the trucker's lounge of my company just to get out of the cold weather. And
yeah.
I went in there, and they had, you know, they had Nigger Ball on TV. And I stay away from that electric toilet as much as possible, but they had a commercial. And they had this nigger kissing this beautiful white Aryan woman right on TV, just kissing her. And I was like, just wanted to throw up, you know.
And all these white guys just watch it. They just keep watching it. They love
yeah.
it. They eat
said,
it up.
I said, what the? You know, I was just livid, you know. But I don't know. It's just, I can't believe they have that on TV. You know, I can't believe it, but I mean, don't have to believe it. It's so, but it's just sick.
I don't believe it.
That's the Jewish form of rejoicing over us.
Oh, sure.
That's the mark that we've been completely defeated by Satan.
Okay, it's like Azazel kissing Eva with an illusion there, you know.
They have taken crafty counsel against thy people. That's what all this nonsense is that's thrown against us, you know, race mixing and promotion of multicultural diversity and slogans like diversity is our strength. This is all crafty counsel against the people of Yahweh. You know, and I think we could just go on and on listing the different ways that are currently the crafty counsel of Jews against Yahweh's chosen race. All with our destruction in mind. None of it for our good. Forget what they say. You know, what their true motivation is really to destroy us. And another point I wanted to make in this psalm was down at verse 12. It said, who said, let us take to ourselves the houses of Elohim in possession. And that's so much meaning in that verse. Let us take to ourselves the houses of Elohim in possession. They wanted to have, at this time when the psalm was written, all the possessions of Yahweh's people. And is it not that now? And basically, they have succeeded. They
well,
have
right.
taken,
it's also
they have
the,
taken
the
houses of Elohim.
That's also the theme of Ezekiel chapter 34.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they have spoiled us. Spoiled meaning taken everything that is ours. You know, even if we have a house. You know, the majority of us have mortgages to Jewish-owned banks and pay interest to the Jew. They've set the society up where you're almost forced to do such a thing. You know, and I also
well, that's why Gog and Magog have already been here looting and pillaging. In fact, most of the looting and pillaging is over with. There's not much more left to take.
So it would seem. So it would seem that at this point they've pretty much taken just about everything there is to take and own everything that there is to own, you know, with their massive amounts of capital. And if they run short, they just fire up the printing press and come up with another trillion, which we turn around and give to the banks, which I was amazed at how quickly the white race swallowed that whole debacle here a few months back. I think the final payout was a couple of trillion, 2.5 trillion, that just was given out to various banking houses.
Yeah, well, I mean, they trust their representatives. It was a bipartisan effort.
Yeah, you know.
Well, they could have just revived the economy. They could have given everybody over 50 million dollars, made them quit their jobs, and buy a GM truck and a Ford vehicle, and just totally, you know, got the economy back started if they really wanted to.
Well, my thought was what they should have done if they're printing that much money. Forgive our mortgages.
Exactly, and everybody could have taken that $1 million and paid off their mortgage.
Yeah. Well, I don't even say give me the cash. Just erase my debt. Look at my mortgage and say, all right, Citibank or whatever bank my mortgage is with, whatever, you know, the Jew du jour. Say, yeah, Greg owes X amount on his house. Okay, that debt is forgiven. He now owns that house outright. And, you know, and the bank would be given their big pile of money, so they don't really lose. But that conversation never even came up to erase some of the debt of the American people.
But even if that happened, the Jew is still in the seat there. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's what they want, is to give handouts there.
People, we haven't, most of us still haven't learned from the Great Depression and the Second World War. I mean, the Jew has total control over the flow of money, goods, and services globally. He's had it for well over 100 years now. And in the Great Depression, none of the liberal programs instituted by the Democrats, Franklin Roosevelt and company, none of those programs fixed the problem. They actually all made it worse. And the problem was simply that credit was too tight and there wasn't enough money in the economy. And the central bankers had done that on purpose. And as soon as we agreed to go to war against Nazi Germany, there was plenty of money for all these companies to suddenly tool up for war and hire millions of employees, right? Where'd that money come from? It came from the Jew printing presses.
Right. Just
bottom
like
line,
today.
They control the economy. They have created this recession. Or whatever you want to call it, this depression, recession, I don't care what you call it.
Meltdown.
They've created it. They have created it. They have engineered it just like they engineered it in 1929.
The naming race needs to shoot for reparations.
Bill, that's well said.
It's a bad joke.
Well, the reparations are written into the scripture.
Oh, really?
The reparations are written into the prophecy.
I didn't know that.
Oh, absolutely. Read on Revelation chapter 17-18.
You know, Bill, I'm agreeing here with Matt the Watt and Bill G that what we're experiencing right now is clearly engineered. I would assume there's a timeline. It's probably been changed one or two times due to various variables that came up that were somewhat out of the Jews' control. But there is clearly a plan in place and a timeline in place to bring this nation down and to, you know, bring about chaos and then to offer a solution that obviously is not going to be a good solution for us.
Well, the solution, whatever step they're going to take next, it could be a one world government. It could be a one world currency. It could be a regional currency. They're going to offer something as a solution that's going to advance their agenda. That's
right, and in the past, they've been the master of creating a crisis and then creating a solution for the crisis where people being desperate enough are going to go along. And it seems like now with the profound wealth that they have accumulated, I've heard estimates of money that they control in the quadrillions, beyond a trillion.
Well, the numbers mean nothing. Numbers in money mean nothing because the money's only worth what people esteem it to be worth. And right now, I'm being honest with you, and I say it all the time, when you pay a monkey $40 million of something to play a game, whatever that is that you're paying them can't be worth anything.
Yeah. Well, it's temporarily worth it.
Because nobody's going to pay a monkey anything of real value to play a game.
Yeah.
Not even the Jews are that dumb.
No, they clearly at this point have probably absconded with all the precious metals, you know, gold, silver. They clearly own the vast majority of it.
The most important asset the Jews have stolen on us is the production capacity that they moved to the hands of the Asians from our corporations, which are all based upon our technology and our development. I mean, the Chinese couldn't develop a wheel until the first white men went to China.
Yeah. So they have, they pretty much got us where they want us at this point, and I'm sure to them it looks pretty good for them and their plan. Fortunately, I think their whole plan is going to blow up in their face in Yahweh's time.
Well, yeah, it is, but it's going to be on his time, and our people have not suffered hardly enough, and we know they haven't suffered enough because they're not one bit repentant. And if they don't get out of the porno culture and stop partying with the devil, this is going to continue and continue and continue.
Yeah. Well, I know in these times, I feel to spend a lot of time praying as much as I can. Not that it's a lot of time, but I try to just every day just pray to Yahweh just to wake up his race, you know, just to overcome this deception and this worldwide control that the Jews seems to have over our race and the destruction going on in all the white nations of this world. You know, it's incredible how...
Well, the
Jews
only control the Jew has over the white race is the control that the white race gives to him when they buy his movies, when they buy his pornography, when they buy his newspapers. Then the Jew controls us.
Yeah.
And if the white race stopped enriching the Jew and stopped gaining their knowledge from the Jew, or what they think is knowledge, that then we would have no problems.
Well, fortunately, there's a small group of us that see it for what it is. We got about 20, 25 people here tonight that certainly see some light. So that's a start. Doesn't seem like a lot in the big picture of the world, but I'm thankful to see some regulars and to hang out with some folks that have some understanding of who we are in the world and who our enemy is in this world and the designs they have to destroy us.
Right, and Bill G says sometimes that it seems like there's a many people awake and other times it's awfully lonely. And you know, when I sit here on Talk Show, I'm happy because there's 20, 30, 40 people here and I look at how many hits my website got and how many downloads our programs got last weekend and it makes me feel great so many people are awake. And then when I step out the door and go to town and look around me, it's like total despair.
Yeah. Pretty much. So it would seem.
But the good news is it's never been based on numbers.
Well, that's absolutely right, Patricia. But
Gideon had to send, you know, everybody home. I mean, he went out with a fraction of the fraction. So, you know, Yahweh always looks at our heart and just wants people that are, you know, totally committed to him.
Right.
And that's all.
And that's true. But numbers, you know, it's only natural to hope for more awakened brethren. And that's it's something I don't think, with all the knowledge we have, we're never going to stop hoping for.
No, and that's something the Apostle Paul, you know, longed for as well. So it's not a new longing that we have for our brethren.
And I guess, you know, there's some consolation to me in the fact that Enoch exactly prophesied that in the end times it would be exactly how it is right now. Massive deception by Yahweh's enemies and practicing great deceits in the last time towards Yahweh's chosen people. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Our people are deceived to the point where they actually think the enemies of Yahweh are the chosen of Yahweh. It doesn't get much more deceptive than that.
No, I mean, that just tops all. I mean, when you figure that in any time you go to expose them, that you're called an anti-Semite and a hate crime. I mean, it's absolutely brilliantly diabolical.
It's brilliant. It's satanically brilliant. I almost have to congratulate them, but I will not congratulate them. But I realize that it's a brilliant strategy, what they've done, to actually trick Yahweh's chosen race into thinking that the Jews are Yahweh's chosen race, and that if Yahweh's true chosen race speaks out against the Jews, that laws have been passed to make that a crime in most countries of the world. And it's a brilliant strategy, you know?
And then they want to go around and call Jacob dirty, sneaky thief.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, just about anything they say is the exact opposite.
It really is. And one of the great studies that there is for us to do is a lifelong study of Jews and their strategies, because they're so intimately pointed at us. I believe we have to keep up and be aware of it, lest we be tricked.
Well, they've only stolen the heritage to tear it down. That they do it all the time.
Yeah.
They even tear down the Old Testament all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, now they do a poor job at representing Yahweh's chosen, that's for sure. You know, they might have the name, but they certainly don't have any life along with it. And their Talmud is I don't even want to get into what a book that is.
Well, that's, you know, a lot of us have to become educated about that book. Because that's very important, is to be able to tell people what's in that book.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely amazing. You know, my friend Christian is, you know, searching, and he went up to this evangelical church on Maui one Sunday, and the associate pastor got up and started talking about the Talmud and how it was just an extra biblical book, just like, you know, Calvin or, you know, any of the other books that are out there about Christianity.
I would like to beat him
to it. Oh, I'm telling you, I could barely, I nearly sought him out. I really did, because if I'd been there, I'd have stood up and rebuked him right there in the congregation.
Wow, he needs to be beat to a pulp.
Exactly.
He clearly is not
ready. I don't know of any other cure for that. I mean, it's I know it's not really great to resort to violence immediately, but I know no other cure.
But I mean, it's just amazing to me that all these Judeo-Christians think the Talmud's an excellent book.
Yeah, and for him to stand up there and say that, he must have gotten that from an ADL brochure. He could not get that from any knowledge at all of the book itself. It's the most evil book in the world. And he must have, you know, the ADL must have passed out a brochure to ministers explaining the Talmud. And they just read it and believed it. That's the only supposition I have about
that.
That
must be what they're teaching at seminary now.
Yeah, it's coming from somewhere. I mean, higher up. Because these, most of these mainstream ministers, I mean, you and Greg would know more than me. They only read what they're handed, right? From your church,
yeah,
or organization.
And no doubt they pulled a few nice sounding platitude verses out of there, which, you know, there's got to be some handful of nice verses in there that don't come across as too evil. You know, I'm sure they shared those in their ADL brochure.
I think Patricia was more was involved professionally in evangelism in mainstream religion longer than you were, Greg, if I'm not mistaken. And I just like, mm-hmm, to ask her, if before her awakening, if she ever picked up a book and studied it that was outside of the curriculum and what you'd find, say, on a bookstore in Barnes & Noble's, on a store shelf in the Christian section. Yeah,
well,
you know,
I would always, I was always into the conspiracy stuff. Yahweh opened my eyes to that early in my Christian walk. And
but
so
did you ever study Josephus outside of the little bit you may have gotten in seminary school?
No, never looked at Josephus, never looked at, you know, Diodorus Siculus, never looked at Strabo, never looked at any of those things. And I'll tell you, when I did wake up to it, Bill, it was it was very tough to find any of the history of our people. I didn't even know where to begin to look until Christogeny, and then you have your your Lost Tribes information there, the histories. That was like a real breath of fresh air to me. That's what I've been searching for a long time. Because I'm one of those folks, if I'm in for a penny, I'm in for a pound.
I'm going to tell. I was in a position where I just couldn't go over and run Google searches, and I actually studied for about 6, 8, 10 months. I read about what to read.
Wow.
It took me that long to figure out what from starting from scratch. I mean, in 1997, I had two Ree Raymond Cap booklets and a Comparé booklet and the Bible. That's all I had. And it took a year to figure out what to read. Would be my guess. I mean, it was a while, that's for sure. And when I found Hobbit's Loeb Library, that's when I thought I hit pay dirt. And that sounds that might sound incredible to a lot of identity people that Hobbit could produce something good, but they actually do. The Loeb Library is actually it's a collection of the classics that was most of it was translated back in the 19-teens and 1920s and 1930s, and they've started redoing pieces of it. But I mean, most of the translations I obtained were that old; they were already 100 years old. And they supply the Greek and Latin manuscripts, side by side with English translations. And most of the translators of the Loeb Library, most of them were Englishmen who had got their own training, before the turn of the century, during the Victorian era. And most of them were quite learned men. So that was a blessing to find that.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Harvard originally was founded by godly men.
Yeah, right. And now it's 30% Jewish, and 85% of the students get A's.
Oh, I wouldn't want to send a kid there now.
Not white.
It still has this big reputation. I wouldn't want to send my kid there. No thanks.
It's actually 30% Jewish, and the I'm sure some of them are my ancestors. That the the founding Puritans of Harvard are probably spinning in their graves.
No doubt about it. Same with Yale. Those kind of colleges early on were training ministers. They wouldn't even recognize what's going on there now.
That's right. Same as Princeton, all those Ivy League schools.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and you can imagine that the downfall of those schools was the infiltration of Jewish leadership as many, many organizations that had an initial good start, and the Jew, as they worm their way in and worm their way to the top, it's just in their nature to do that and bring that thing down to the
pit. Maybe
we
should
them.
Change the name of it from the Ivy League to the Oive League.
Pretty good, Bill. I like that.
Well, BU in Boston. Boston University is always called BJU.
Well, I mean, we could spend entire programs on the infiltration of a Jew in academia. They control it. They control almost every single university. They control top professorships, curriculum, textbook publishing, everything. So they can warp the minds of the young whites as they come up through high school and college, and just ruin them right there.
Oh, it's seamless.
Poison their mind. They get them. Now it's so complete. They're teaching them amazingly disgusting homosexual things as early as kindergarten, first and second grade, in a lot of states.
Yes, and they're trying to get their parents to molest their children at, when they're only 3 years old.
Yeah. So, if they're teaching that in, elementary school, you can imagine what they're teaching in high school and college. These are the creatures that we've allowed to take over our lands and rule over us,
Well, I think Bill G. made a great point before I crashed here, saying that the Jews are masters of identity, theft. And I think that's really interesting that here at the end of the age, and it has to be the end of the age because we're disappearing, that identity theft is such a huge crime and, worldwide now. And, and the Jews are masters at it. So it's kind of interesting that crime is so you know, popular now, for lack of a better word, you know, and that's what the Jews specialize in, is identity theft.
There's very little crime they haven't mastered at this point. You know, they have mastered the crime of white slavery.
Well, it boils down to the fact that wherever you have a Jew, you have a crime. I mean, that's what they do. They're never going to work if they could avoid it. They're always going to earn their money, or earn as much money as they can illicitly. It's their natural inclination. That proves who they are, and people still don't see it.
They're the true parasite.
Even the media, even you could Google Jew crime and Jew. One day last week for a program, I Googled Jewish drug rings, and Google came back with dozens and dozens of reports from all over the country from all over the world, really, on Jewish drug rings getting knocked over by the authorities. And I was really shocked that information isn't hushed up.
I think they would if they could, but they just can't keep it. There's so much Jewish crime. They literally just cannot contain it all.
You don't Google English drug rings and see how many hits you get. Google Lithuanian drug rings and see how many hits you get. Probably won't get hardly any English drug ring.
No, I know, and they are the top ones of kidnapping these many white European girls, Ukrainian white girls. And,
I think it was Israeli drug rings that I Googled. It was Israeli drug rings. But it boils down to the same thing. And that's another thing, and Mike at Profink had brought this to my attention, and I checked it out, and it's true. You know, this DynCorp and Halliburton have a huge scandal going with these sex slaves, these sex slave rings.
Right.
And the mainstream media doesn't say hardly a peep about it. And they're all over Blackwater, and Blackwater doesn't have any. Yeah, you know, they're basically just doing what they were hired to do, and they're doing it a little too effectively, which is their big problem. And the media, the liberal media, is all over Blackwater, but Blackwater is basically run by Christians.
Oh, I don't know that, Bill.
Now, we
had a report from someone this week that's a patriot and always hands out 9/11 DVDs and things like that. And he went into a Christian bookstore to meet with the owner to discuss something with him. And a Blackwater guy in full regalia came in and started harassing them. And the guy laughed at him. I've got a letter to the editor that I just published. And he said, if you don't like what's going on in the United States, you should just, move to another country. It was just ridiculous.
Well, they laughed at him.
From
what I saw, that Blackwater gets nothing but bad press. And DynCorp and Halliburton, that whole thing's pretty much hushed up.
Oh, I don't know. I think Halliburton, in the circles that I sit in now, Halliburton and DynCorp get terrible press, especially over that thing in Harding, Montana.
Did they get terrible press from ABC and NBC and CNN and MSNBC? That's the press that counts, because that's the press that most people still pay attention to.
Well, that's true. I agree with that, but I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting, since Blackwater just relocated their headquarters, down the road here. So.
Yeah, well, it just seems to me that there is a clear distinction between the way certain companies are treated, and certain companies just seem to get a pass.
Well. Pilgrim's making the point that Blackwater is no sweetheart group, and if the others deserve bad press, they should get it, but don't sing the praise of Blackwater too highly.
But there's a clear dichotomy in how those companies are being treated. To me, I can see it. I don't know. It looked pretty clear. I could be wrong, but it looked pretty clear to me. And I even asked my mother about it, and she had no idea about the DynCorp Halliburton sex slave scandal. And she watches the mainstream news. And for that reason, she's my barometer about a lot of those things.
Well, I'm sure you're right. You know, when I was in Bulgaria a year ago, a little over a year ago now, there was some brand new shopping centers. And, you know, it's not a wealthy country. I mean, what's going on here? What are all these, you know, who shops in these shopping centers? You know, I mean, glass and steel, beautiful, latest architecture there in Sofia and one in Plovdiv. And then I was up to speed on what that was about. That's all a money laundering operation off the Natasha sex slave trade. And that's what all the new building that's going on in Bulgaria and Eastern Europe is all related to the sex slaves.
Really?
Yeah. They're making so much money, they gotta hide it.
You know,
so sad.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, when you look at the judgment on Babylon in Revelation, and this, their list of sins, one of their sins is how they were, I can't remember the word exactly, but it talked about how they were trafficking in the souls of men. And I just view that as exactly what you just mentioned, how they traffic in souls, kidnapping young white women mostly, forcing them into prostitution. Just wickedness, such wickedness. Just disturbing to think about it. And their judgment was going to be severe for it.
Well, I don't know, wasn't it one of you folks, maybe not, that sent me something this week that said that 25,000 Ukrainian children that were adopted out, they were adopted to American Jews and Israeli Jews in Israel, are all missing. They think they've all been taken for organ harvesting.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, organ harvesting is just one more way of trafficking in souls, you know, trafficking in souls for prostitution, trafficking in souls for selling organs. I mean, does it get any more wicked than that? No. These are the kind of people we're dealing with here, you know.
So, Greg, to go back to your point, the beginning of the call, saying how organized the Jews are, and how disorganized we are. What would you say to everyone in the chat room? What should be our mindset here to start pulling together instead of arguing with one another?
Well, I would say step one is to realize that we are in a war and that we have a vastly organized financed enemy that seeks our destruction, and that seeks our hurt at every turn, that wants to slaughter us and has slaughtered tens of millions of us in this lifetime, you know, has caused the war, every war in our last 100 years and way back past that. You know, I mean, this is the enemy that we face today, and to realize that the vast majority of our racial kin have no concept that we're even in a battle. I mean, it's enough to make you pull your hair out. I talk to people all the time, and I just, you know, you have to throw out little tidbits to white sheeple. You can't come on too strong or you'll freak them out, so you have to kind of, you know, feed them a little spoonful. And you try to, you know, many times I'll try to point out something about Jews to them just to see if there's some openness. And the vast majority of them are just completely clueless that there's even any issue with Jews. They realize deep down there's something about them, but they're not used to being a thinker and taking a thought and taking it to another level to discuss it, to understand it, to make a personal application. That these are creatures that want to take everything you have, that, you know, want to destroy you, basically. And again, we trace it back to Genesis 3:15. There is a true enmity that seed line has toward us. And yet they seem to have somehow erased the enmity that we should have toward them. You know, we not only do we not have enmity toward them, they've tricked us into elevating them to chosen Israel status. It's incredible. I just sometimes my head spins thinking about it. I'm glad that there's 20, 30, 40 people on here tonight that see what I see. And I just give thanks to Yahweh that it is not a numbers game, fortunately. It is always going to be a small group that sees this. You know, and even the final overcomers, based on worldwide numbers, you know, if you want to take the 144,000, literally 12,000 from each tribe, that's not a whole lot of folks. So, I don't know. I'm glad to hang out with a handful of people that see the truth. I give thanks for that.
Amen. You know, Brian's, I'm trying to get him to call in, but he's brought up a really good point here that our folk need to drop the self-hate guilt trip, you know. Absolutely. You know, I have a friend on Maui who's just this most beautiful girl. I mean, she is stunning. And, you know, when I asked her what her nationality was, what her heritage was, and she very apologetically told me German. And I was like, girl, you shouldn't
apologize.
And I had to, you know, totally change her paradigm on that. So, you know, please, I mean, be proud of who you are, you know. And she didn't get it. I mean, she was just shocked. I don't think anybody had ever told her the wonderful things about the German people. She was so guilt-ridden over, you know, the whole, you know, Nazi Germany lie.
Well, the Jews done their job well.
I wish I could talk to that girl for an hour. Just an hour.
Oh, really?
It's a damn shame. But, yeah, that's the way much of our race is. And that, you know, that also, that guilt that's bred into us is an assistance to the enemy in getting us to mix our race.
You know, the sad thing about it is
they don't esteem their race. Go ahead, Gerald.
you stepped on my line. We in the South have experienced this directly because starting back in the late 50s and throughout the 60s and 70s, we were made to be to feel like we were inferior and that we were lesser than the rest of the people in the country because we were from the South and that we had Southern ideals and heritage. And I grew up in that environment, and I feel very bitter toward it.
Yeah,
well,
that's
totally true. Gerald, I mean, you got people love to, you know, make fun of the South and pick on the South.
Well, we
were
stereotyped in the movies, on television, on radio, all during that period. And we were made to be the laughing stock of the entire country. I can remember a Jew on the radio, on one of the radio talk programs back in the late 50s. His name was Jerry Williams, because that wasn't his real name. But he had a talk show. And he had Richard Cotton from California, who was a conservative. He had conservative viewpoint program out then. He was a very fine fella. He didn't know Christian identity, but he knew a lot of other things. And he was on Jerry Williams' program one day. And Jerry Williams made the comment that nothing gave him any more pleasure in his life than to fly in a plane over the state of Mississippi and relieve himself. And that just tore me up. And I didn't know a great deal back in the late 50s, but I knew that that was wrong. And I didn't realize that he was a Jew at the time, although Richard Cotton did expose him as being a Jew. He referred to him as "you people." And this guy went bananas because they don't like that terminology at all. But this just upset me. And being a person from the South, I've had to endure this most of my life. And I'm very resentful. And that's why I fly my Confederate flag. I love it. I love the heritage, the culture, the history of it. It is not a hate symbol. It is not a symbol of racism. It is a symbol of my people and my Scottish background. And I apologize to no one for it.
Amen to that.
Well, I am. You know, I lived so long in you know, in the islands, and oh my gosh, you know, white people, we're responsible for all the things that are wrong with Hawaii. I mean, but I would always look around and go, well, you know, how can that be? I mean, because, you know, oh, it's our fault that the Hawaiians are so dysfunctional today. It's our fault that, you know, how can that be? If they're such a marvelous people, then why aren't they, you know, why haven't they, you know, why did they allow it to happen to them? And why haven't they risen above it? Bill, can you unmute Brian?
Why is he muted? I thought I unmuted everybody.
Somehow he's stuck on mute.
I've lost the chat room. The storms are moving in, so I can't. Unfortunately, I can't read the chat room.
I am unable to get in the chat room either. I'm trying as I'm talking here, but it's not even letting me into TalkShoe currently. I can't get TalkShoe.com.
It looks like, you know, I'm looking back at the chat because I thought Robert was here and he's gone. It looks like a lot of people are getting thrown out.
Yeah, I can't even get TalkShoe to open up to log in.
Yeah, it's been a bumpy ride here tonight, apparently.
Yeah, see, I'm having the same problem. I've been trying to log back in to TalkShoe for about 25 minutes, and I can't do it.
It looks like Troublemaker got tossed, Robert got tossed, Matt got tossed. A bunch of people are tossed.
Hey, Brian, how are you tonight?
No, actually not.
How's it going, Brian?
Good evening. How are we doing? Having some TalkShoe issues, huh?
Yeah, but I guess the phone's working out better than the chat room. Everybody's getting hammered in the chat room by the technology there.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. So how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, Brian. Glad this is Brian, right?
Yes.
Yeah, glad you could in here. Wish I could get into the chat room, but apparently I'm not going to be able to. So,
Guest 15 has made an interesting comment here. Since you guys can't see, well, I'll tell you, I'll read you a little of the chat room. Jason has said, I think Ross Perot said, you people also don't feel bad. I've taken much heat because I'm originally from West Virginia. Well, yeah, West Virginia certainly gets their share of derision, no question. And Guest 15 says, apparently Eisenhower and Churchill peed into the Rhine River when they invaded Germany in March of 45. Some said Patton did too, but do not know about it.
Oh, Patricia, you mentioned that. I have an 8x10 glossy of General Patton doing that very thing. Somebody caught him on film. So it actually happened.
I wouldn't.
It was an accident. I mean, he didn't do it, you know, for the cameras.
Right. I think if Patton did it, he did it because he had to go.
Right.
And Eisenhower would do it for a different reason.
I agree.
Well, I think it's just amazing that Eisenhower, Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt were all Jews. I mean, absolutely amazing. And what I didn't know, and I just read this week, and RP would probably know about this, I read an old Eustace Mullins piece on FDR, where he outed Woodrow Wilson as a Jew. He said his real name was Woodrow Wilson.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard that, but I have not ever seen it substantiated. I'm being honest. I've heard it before, Woodrow Wilson. But I've never seen. And Wilson is, you know, it's a name that Jews have used, but it's also a German name, Wilson, and it's a Saxon name.
Well, there's no questioning it. He's the one that ushered the Jews into power into.
Oh, I believe it. I totally.
Yeah.
I've talked about it all the time.
Without a doubt.
All the evils of the Woodrow Wilson administration.
Yeah, if he really did say I've unwittingly sold out my country, I would say more likely it was I have wittingly sold out my country. Hey, can I change the topic for just a minute? Because I owe everyone a huge apology here. I have obviously, and I just want to apologize to everyone, if I have led you to believe that vaccines cause autism, I want to tell you now that I have been wrong. Because today on The View, Dr. Oz clarified that, and he said no, that autism was caused by the mother's stress during her third trimester.
He
that
should
vaccines
be
didn't have
death
anything
too.
To do with it. So I'm going to call Wendy. She expected to be here tonight. Something must have happened.
Take
and tell her to take down her
down.
Take down her website that we've been completely wrong about this because Dr. Oz says so.
Apology accepted.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad. I knew I could count on you not to hold that against me, Gerald. How could I be so misinformed?
Stress.
Yeah, it like crazy. What only this generation of women have stress in their third trimester? What about your grandmother and your great grandmother? They didn't have any stress in their lives?
And you know how many blind women are gonna blindly accept that?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Women are going to blindly accept that because it was on Oprah.
Yeah. Well, Matthew doesn't know who Dr. Oz is. He got his start on the Oprah Winfrey show. He's the paid shill for the pharmaceutical companies there. And he specializes in what they call complementary medicine, which is allopathic medicine's way to stem the tide. You know, they're having a financial hemorrhage out of allopathic medicine into alternative medicine because, you know, it doesn't work and it poisons people. So that's what they've propped that up to kind of stop the hemorrhage. And so he's been the talking head on Oprah for some time, but he was on The View today. And it was just unbelievable.
Oh,
he looks like an Edomite. Yeah, he's got to be an Edomite somewhere along the line. I mean, that's a whopper. I mean, I can't believe people could sit there with a straight face. I can't even imagine it.
That's crazy. I could never find that credible.
Yeah, well, they're attacking your children. They're attacking. They're assaulting them with a deadly weapon over and over again. And now they're telling the mother, no, it's your own fault because you were stressed out. That is just ugly.
Yeah, that's
and,
just
and it's just like and it's just like everyone people getting cancer today. Oh, it's because you didn't eat right and you did this and you did that. They blame you. No, does it have anything to do with the fact that we've loaded your food with toxins, you know, pesticides, taken all the beneficial things out of it? No, would that have anything to do with it? Oh, no, I don't think so. It's all your own fault. They're killing you and then blaming you. It's phenomenal.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. How many periods in history have we had extremely stressful situations and women had babies and never had a problem?
Right. No autism.
You know, how many women watched their husbands go off and die in the Second World War and they were home pregnant? And how many women watched their husbands go off and die in a war in Northern aggression and they were home pregnant, and there was no outbreak of autism during the Second World War or during the First World War or at any time until the last 20 years.
Was that word even mentioned during World War II, World War I?
I don't even remember the word until I'm like in my mid-teens. I don't think I heard the word until I was in my mid-teens. And
no,
even then it was very rare.
Autism wasn't even described till 1942.
Okay.
Well,
wasn't even in the textbook.
When did it get into popular culture? Because I wouldn't have read it in a you know,
medical
textbook.
It mustn't have gotten to the popular culture until at least the 70s.
Well, that's what my mid-teens, and that's
exactly.
What I would think. Maybe.
Well, that's because they upped the vaccine schedule so heavily.
Yep. That's when they really started to come on.
I kind of vaguely remember a TV show with an autistic kid in the mid to late 70s. Or it talked about autism in the mid to late 70s. I kind of remember that.
Oh, Pilgrim says, does stress cause more Jellins? Yes, it must be all those planes flying overhead that's stressing you out. It gives you more Jellins. Greg, what is the latest on chemtrails? After that last show that you did, they sure painted your house.
Well, they continue unabated. They are going on pretty much worldwide with most activity in white countries. You know, I'm plugged into a group that pretty much has daily updates with video of what's going on in various white countries. I mean, it's I don't know. It's the same old thing. We're being sprayed on a regular basis. And my personal opinion, I believe that we are under assault by the air that we breathe via chemtrail spraying, the food that we eat via genetic modification of food, seeds,
the water that we drink via fluoride. And also, and I'm a hardcore conspiracy guy because I understand who's behind the conspiracy, and I understand how much they hate us and want to control it. I also believe via airwaves that we are being controlled via cell phone towers. And if you've noticed these insane-looking triangular towers that are everywhere around us, far more than what they would need for your cell phone to get coverage. That's the biggest crock since stress causing autism. And we are under nonstop attack, 24/7. And we have an enemy. That was really my burden tonight. You know, not that we don't know that we have an enemy, but to get into the fact that this enemy has a true hatred for us and wants to destroy us and steal everything that we have, and they just about have. You know, and that's why I really think something big is in the works in terms of a true world government, because they've pretty much accomplished what they wanted to set out to accomplish. 20 or 30 years ago, they didn't own everything that we had. Now they do, and now they've literally controlled the world. And I think they want to take it on to the next logical step, which is for them to be in true absolute control of this world. Right now their control is strong, but it's not absolute. A lot of it is behind the scenes via the Jewish advisors, although they're really not so much behind the scenes anymore. They're pretty much right out there, especially in the current administration. It's riddled with Jews top to bottom. It's amazing to me.
Well, so were the last four or five administrations, and it's probably gone on. I never looked at the you know, Kissinger was a prominent figure in the Nixon administration, but I never looked at the rest of the staff.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Carter was, Kissinger worked for him too, I believe, and so did that Brzezinski, that Zbigniew Brzezinski, that newamericancentury.org, and he's a straight devil.
His both his sons ran the campaigns. One ran Obama's campaign, and the other one ran McCain's campaign.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? And the New York Times happened to pick both of them as the same, you know, as its preferred candidate in both primaries. And it, you couldn't write a better script. It's incredible.
Yeah, don't you just,
Jason, I don't want to miss
Jason's
comment.
Just keep waiting for someone to wake up around you and go, wait a minute. Why are there so many Jews in the White House, in the staff, in the Congress?
Yeah, well, only 3% of the country is Jews, don't you know? It's just that every one of them happens to be in Washington, New York, Miami, and Los Angeles at the same time.
You know, how have these people managed to lead? You know, all of a sudden they're the majority of the lawyers and the doctors and the CEOs of big companies and Hollywood and politics. Are they just that talented? Are they that much smarter than the rest of us?
No, they operate their race as a crime ring. That's exactly what they do. Their race operates as a crime ring.
Well, now you see why I wanted to get into these verses in Psalms that talk about how confederate they are and how much of one accord they are against us. You know, it's like those verses were written this morning. We look around us and we see the organization of the Jew. And there are countless filthy organizations.
Every time a Christian embraces or accepts a Jew, he's putting a syringe in a Jewish doctor's hand to stab into a white baby's ass. He's putting a mortgage foreclosure paper into a Jewish banker's hand to destroy a white family with. Well, we empower the Jews. We are empowering the devil by giving him our business, by doing business with him, by elevating him into positions of authority, by respecting his opinions. We're empowering the devil in every facet of life. And we're the criminals. It is our fault, Patricia, because we empowered them to do it to us.
You're right. It's our punishment. I mean, there's no getting around it. But, you know, I always think about when Yahweh finally punished the Assyrians and said, listen, I let you punish my people this much, and you way overdid it, so now I'm going to punish you more.
Well, right.
And, And so I'm sure that they're way overdoing it and plan to do it even more, and they will meet their day.
You know, boycott has been one of their major weapons. They used it against Germany very effectively. It's a shame that we can't mount a reliable boycott against them. And Bill is right 100%. But I don't know if we can get enough people to do that or not.
You can't get anybody to participate in an action unless you get them to agree on the problem. And if you went to the average mainstream evangelical and told him, you know, don't you think there's a problem with these Jews, he'd thrash you. How dare you insult God's people? How dare you do that?
Yeah.
How dare you insult the devil? They
you know,
don't
before it disappears from the screen, I think it's already, you know, up out of my view. Jason made a good comment that, a little while ago about digital TV. And that's just a remarkable thing. Hawaii was the first state to go digital, and it's two-way communication. That is their last, you know, bastion of spying on us, and they will never turn the television off. I don't care if they shut down the internet. I don't care if, you know, what else they, you know, the grocery stores have no food. No, they will keep the television on whether you pay your electric bill or not, because that's how they're listening in to everything going on in your house, whether the television's on or not.
Talk about that, Patricia, because I've read where
in the
digital version that they have small cameras and microphones inside the cable receivers. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And I would, you know, it sounds like wild conspiracy lunacy when you start in on this, but I actually had matter of fact, right before the call tonight, some friends of mine called, and he is a telecommunications expert. As a matter of fact, he designs all the technology, the way they can pull all the – I told him, you know, our phones are tapped here. And he goes, oh, yeah, every phone is now. And he explained all of this to me the last time we met on Maui and said it's absolutely true. Everything's a two-way device. And because we were having a very in-depth conversation, his wife was very paranoid. She kept saying, "Oh, lower your voice, you know." So I started to take the battery off my cell phone, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm taking the battery off." She says, "Don't bother. There's a backup battery. They can always listen in." He says it's important to turn the, if you have a camera phone, always turn it to the inside so that they don't have as good GPS on you.
You know, I thought it was strange when we all had to get the new box to change over to the new system.
That well, there's
me
other
in
technology.
Itself.
There's other reasons for that are legitimate. There are other reasons for the mandatory, you know, television change that are legitimate.
Oh, because they do want us to get better television reception, Bill.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
we
understand that, but they also want to reuse the bandwidth. And that's, you know, even though they might, I'm not saying there's not an ulterior motive, but there are other legitimate reasons why they were going to stop broadcasting in the old standards.
Totally okay.
I guess it really doesn't matter because as the world turns, it's been discontinued, so it's really
no,
not
Gerald.
An issue now.
That's
Gerald,
a horrible,
you
that's a horrible
that.
Thought.
It's not on anymore?
No, they had a deal on Fox News this morning saying that it had been discontinued by the network.
You know they don't make any more Leave It to Beavers. You know that, Gerald, don't you?
Is this an age joke?
They've all been repeats.
I think it is.
They have all been repeats the last 40 or 50 years.
I was going to wait 25 years and catch up on all my soap operas all at once because the plot line doesn't change much. I think you only need to tune in once every 25 years and you know what's going on. So,
well, if I could go back to the 50s and see a lot of those original shows, they were clean and decent and moral, and they meant a lot to me back in those days. And, of course, now they're all made fun of.
Did you know that George Burns was a kike?
Oh, yeah. That, I've known that for years.
Okay.
And Gracie.
But did you know him when you were watching him?
I never liked him. I didn't even like him in Oh God.
Nathan Birnbaum. I wouldn't watch that movie. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
Well, you know, you had Jack Benny. Nearly all of those original people back then were Jews. We need to do a program just on Hollywood actors and actresses and outing all of these people who are Jews and they have been Jews. Danny Kaye. There's so many of them.
Well,
you and RP need to do that show, Gerald, because I mean he's up to speed on all that too.
And I'm way too young.
Yeah, Jason's saying that that he'd love to see a new Andy Griffith. You know, that was a great show. But you know, I always wondered. You know, I always thought it was kind of funny that evangelicals way back then forbid their, you know, didn't put TV in their homes. They knew it was a one-eyed monster then, and they wouldn't have it. And I always thought that was so unusual. And now I look and go, oh my gosh, what tremendous discernment they had to see just how evil the television was. So even though the shows were, you know, moral at that time, the advertising was still going great guns. Great guns. And look, I mean, we were just talking about it the other day, Ingrid and I. We have a friend who loves to, you know, work with us because, you know, we're way out in the country. We don't run into town to have lunch. I mean, whatever food that's going to be is stuff that we've made here. And we're scratch cooks. We, you know, people are into convenience food. Well, we're into inconvenience food. I mean, it's the way your grandmother did it is probably the way we're doing it. And so he's never eaten like that. And he's so amazed. And so we were talking like, what happened to his mother? What happened to women in the 60s and 70s that they don't know how to cook and don't cook from scratch and don't prepare wholesome food? And that was an entire attack by the media. I mean, Peg Bracken and I Hate to Cook. I mean, all the convenience foods on there, TV dinners. I mean, no wonder we're malnourished.
You know, I basically taught my first wife a lot and got her started anyway on cooking from scratch, and then we didn't work out. I did the same thing with my second wife, and that didn't work out. I'm glad I'm living home with Mom, and she's still cooking from scratch. But you're absolutely right. Women do not. You know, I worked in New Jersey at a company from 93 to 96, and we were bought by a company that was in Virginia, and a whole bunch of rednecks came up, and they were all great guys. Don't get me wrong, but all these guys from Virginia come up to New Jersey, and they're learning how to run this company they just bought. And in 96, they moved the company to Virginia, actually in 95. But they're all coming up and staying in New Jersey, and they're eating out. And they all – their first impression of New Jersey was, doesn't anybody eat at home here? Because all the restaurants in the New York City area where you know, Jersey surrounds, you know, abuts New York, everybody eats out. Everybody eats out every night. It's crazy. It's all the restaurants are full every night, whether you go on a Tuesday, a Thursday, a Saturday, it doesn't matter.
Dallas is the same way. I used to say, doesn't anyone know how to cook here?
Yeah, and that's what all these guys from out of town, you know, these guys are from rural Virginia, which is, I went down there. I actually, after they moved the company, I traveled the opposite direction for a year back and forth. And it's beautiful down there, and everybody eats at home. And every time I went to a restaurant down there, it was empty. You know, and I never saw anybody out. And it was quite the opposite. You could walk into a restaurant there on a Thursday night and have your pick of tables. But we do have, and I don't know if it's caught on with you know, country girls, but in the cities, there's a whole culture of not eating out and fast foods. And I have noticed that the supermarkets here sell a lot of prepared foods at the deli counters, and a lot of salads and a lot of sandwich, a lot more than I ever saw back in the city. And, you know, in the 90s, it's like everybody buys frozen foods and prepared foods. Nobody buys anything from scratch anymore.
Yeah. I'd venture a guess that's nationwide, Bill.
I would say so too.
You see very little flour going over the supermarket counter.
The delis, you know, with all prepared food, and the bakeries do a huge business now, and it is nationwide. It started out in just the little yuppie markets where they would, you know, prepare food and, you know, wealthy people would buy it, and now it's everywhere. Very few people cook anymore, and part of that has been the attack against women to get them into the workforce, because you really don't have time to stay home and make bread and cook if you don't get home until, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock at night.
Well, you know, my mother, when I was a kid growing up, my mother always worked. And she came home, she would leave a list on the table for me or my sister. Every afternoon we'd come home, and on a kitchen table there'd be a list and a $10 bill. And believe it or not, back then you could feed a family of five on a $10 bill. And she'd leave a list and a $10 bill, and it would be our chore to go to the store and get what she needed to prepare dinner. And when she came home, she cooked dinner every night. And we never ate until 7:30, 8 o'clock. But that was our normal routine. We got used to it, and she cooked a meal every night. She worked all day, and she cooked a meal every night.
Wow, that's impressive.
And we sat down and ate a home-cooked meal every night. And a lot of nights it was just maybe some hamburgers and some egg noodles with tomatoes, you know, a couple of cans of tomato straw or something simple like that. But she cooked a meal every night.
You know, is it not easy to see that this is one more area that the Jew has molded us to be a particular way, you know, to rather than preparing our own foods from scratch and eating healthy, we somewhat buy the quickly prepared, pre-prepared, frozen thing from some giant Jew food conglomerate
that we can throw in the oven. They love to get a rake off on every transaction in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and if they're taking gallons of milk and pouring them into quarts, I mean, no matter what they're doing, they're getting a rake off on it. They love to engineer ways to get a rake off on every little transaction in life. There's no doubt. That's what the Jew does best. Now the end result is that society is left hopeless. And I thought about this all my life. I think I have a lot of skills, but I have no. I mean, I could go fishing and stuff like that, but I have no life sustaining skills. Well, like, what if society blew up tomorrow? How many people could go out and get a turkey, say, and gut it and get the feathers off it and cook it in a healthy way and have a meal? Now, none of us could do that. How many of us could do that?
I'd find a way.
Yeah, right. Well, what I'm saying is there's a lot of things we'd have to reinvent from scratch.
Yeah.
And if life blew up tomorrow, how many of us would know enough to find some iron ore and make a horseshoe? Yeah, you know what I mean? Or even to build the oven necessary to smelt the ore. How many of us could weave? I have no idea how cotton gets turned into thread. How many people understand that? Yeah, you know what I mean? And all these basic necessities of the basic building blocks of society, we've lost them. And we've moved most of those processes overseas. And we have Chinese and Indians doing it for us now. And nobody here knows how to do it. I mean, you might find some Amish women, but that's about it.
My sister knows how. I know how to card wool and do all those things. She used to have her own spinning wheel and her own loom and things like that. So, you know,
the only reason why I know what the term card wool means is because I learned the words in Greek, because it's mentioned in the New Testament. That's otherwise I never heard of it.
And you know, as Jacob Israel seriously need to learn a lot of these lost skills, because I think they're going to become mandatory for us to know as time goes on.
Well, that's what, never mind milling the grain. We can't even make a cake out of the flour that's already milled.
Exactly.
And growing the grain and separating it, the chaff and the wheat, and milling it and go, forget it. People can't do that.
Where's my
McDonald's?
We still hunt and garden, though. We do that.
Well, maybe a handful of guys down south do. There's you know, up here I do read and the subscription's just about to run out, and I'm not renewing it because I just don't have time for it. My father subscribed to the Sportsman's newspaper that he liked, and he used to read it and mail it to me in prison. And now the subscription's about to, I got about a stack of 30 of them upstairs. I ain't had time for it. It comes out every other week. Well, anyway, this paper, you know, it talks all the time about how many hunting licenses have been issued, how many deer have been taken, how many turkey have been taken, how many fishing licenses were issued, how many salmon, you know, because we have a big salmon industry, roughly we're account, you know, they believe were taken. And the numbers dwindle every year. And the numbers of licenses issued dwindle every year. And it might be 500,000, and now it's down to, you know, over a 10-year period, down to 225,000. It's the numbers of hunting and fishing licenses dwindle every year. And
they keep increasing the cost of it.
Well, I don't know if it's the cost, because like anything else, I mean, the cost of a Big Mac has gone up, you know, at roughly the same rate. And I don't see a whole lot of people not going to McDonald's because of that.
That's
yeah,
right,
you know?
But what you're saying is true. But they've made hunting is another paradigm that they've
right.
made hunting very unattractive to people. Like, oh my gosh, you'd shoot an animal.
Right, and what I'm saying is that there's less and less of us every year who have those skills.
That's right. Better befriend some country boys. I forget somebody in the chat was just saying that. Yep, country boys. They know how to do all that kind of stuff.
Well,
right.
They're important. And I grew up a city boy, and now I'm in a country, and I'm lost.
Exactly. There's a whole other way of living.
I'm still trying to act like a city boy.
We better go to Jonathan's school there, Bill.
I'll rely on my son. I'll just hope that he's around. What can I say?
With the licenses of hunting and fishing, the way that they're doing it, messing with the licenses and increasing the prices of the licenses and all this.
Why, a license is $12. I thought about getting a license, but I'm going to wait till spring because I got all the gear to fish. I did fish all the time when I was in the street, freshwater and saltwater.
But
that was always my pastime. Canoeing and fishing, and I just don't have time right now. But I'm thinking about getting a license in the spring and maybe going. But a license is still only $12.
Yeah, but what I was trying to say is that it makes it more and more of a headache every year. You have one for the boat, one for the gun, one for to prove that you have to have. You have to be in a group with a bunch of other guys at a certain land where it's okay to hunt, and you just can't do it out of your yard. And you can't do it, you know, I mean, there's the laws are like every other law, retarded. You have the hunting clubs, you know, you got to be a part of the hunting club, and they cost being part of a hunting club.
Yeah, they make it impossible up here, too. There's all kinds of barriers now. You got to go to classes and all kinds of things if you want to go hunting. I don't know about bow hunting. That might be in my future. I can shoot a bow. I did a lot of that when I was a kid. I'm sure it's like riding a bike.
In New York, you have to take a hunter safety class if you've never taken one. You only have to take it one time, then you can get your license.
It's the same way in Ohio, too, but to be honest with you, I recommend it because I've seen a lot of morons out there. And when you give a moron a shotgun, that's a scary thing.
Oh, yeah.
There's two, in the sportsman's paper up here, there's two methods that people kill themselves in droves every year, and they shoot their own family members when they're hunting together, and snowmobiles. I mean, like this winter, three people a week will get killed on snowmobiles. They like to zip through the forest at 60 miles an hour, and all of a sudden they're wrapped around a fence. See it all the time.
I don't know anything about snow or snowmobiles here.
Well, it's the same as jet skis, Brett.
Four-wheelers. That's the talk down here. Four-wheelers. It'd be like that. Four-wheelers.
Right. ATVs.
Well, and I think a lot of this goes back to what we were talking about last night with education. You know, you just need to educate yourself. And, you know, from then on.
And stay away from everybody.
Exactly.
But where there's snowmobiles and other people with shotguns.
Exactly. And see, I've been listening in, and it's weird because in this area, there's still a strong outdoor community, a lot of resources, and it's just something that's very much, it's not shunned. In fact, I see it becoming more and more predominant again, which you know, in my opinion, is definitely a good thing because I agree with what everybody's been saying. I think we're going to have to get back to the basics. I think it's what Bill.
Yeah, there's
said
a lot about. Of basic skills that we're missing as a people that we just haven't had to rely on in years, and they've become lost. How to card wool, like Patricia said, she knows how to card wool. That's amazing.
That is totally amazing.
But can she grow a sheep and shear it?
I can shear it a lot easier than I can kill it. I'd be a vegetarian if I had to kill my own animals.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't grow up with the 4-H club. I mean, I grew up with pets. That's part of, you know, suburban living. I mean, it would be a really tough mindset for me if I, you know, I couldn't kill Burger King and, you know, if I had to. I mean, I guess if I'm hungry enough, I'd learn to do that, but it isn't in my nature to, you know, to kill the animals.
Well, and I think you bring up a good phrase there too, Patricia, because I think earlier the question was, what's it going to take for more of our people to get, you know, get with the program, so to speak. And I think you bring up a good word, and that's hungry. I think when more people start to get hungry, I think that's a strong motivating factor.
Yep, exactly. I think you're right.
And you know, and slowly it is heading that way. And then I think that ties into what Bill was saying. We're gonna, you know, go back to learning the basic skills that our ancestors knew.
Well, right, and it's not just you know, that we've lost most of our women can't cook. It's we can't even get food for them to cook.
Exactly.
It's a
well,
lot.
Well, Bill
of
G is making a great point. I think we won't have the overabundance of deer that we all complain about every year when this all comes down. I think we'll all be really up to speed on a bunch of new venison recipes.
I love venison too. I can cook venison.
Well, we have no shortage of deer in this area.
I haven't seen very very many deer at all here, and I'm a pretty rural. I mean, I'm surrounded by farmland. We saw seven. There were seven deer in the yard, I think, one day back in March, and I haven't seen one since.
Let me tell you, Bill, how.
That don't mean they're not around. But
right, easy it is to see a deer. My dad's been having a lot of health issues. We drove up to Cleveland, and this is right downtown Cleveland. Three deer crossing one of the main intersections.
Wow, no sun at all. Huh?
And that's not unheard of up that way. Just because there's more and more development going on up there, their habitat's being, you know, for the most part, wiped out. And
there's plenty of habitat around here, but I don't see too many deer. Maybe I just, you know, I go to bed before they're just. Maybe it's just my hours. I don't know.
And that.
Well, yeah, but you saw the effect of them, didn't they? Eat your raspberry, blackberry bushes.
Yeah, they wiped out two of my blackberry bushes this summer.
So they're getting around. They're just they're on to your schedule.
I guess so.
No, my brother lives in Massachusetts, and he says you get up at, you know, you go look out in the front, you know, 11 or 12 at night, and the deer are there just eating your hedges.
Well, I do go out on the back porch, and I've never seen any in the evening at night. And I would go out on the back porch all the time for 15 minutes and check out the stars because it's just amazing up here. I never saw so many stars in my life.
Yeah, city boy.
Yeah, well, especially New York City, you know? I mean, you step out, you know, Jersey City, you step out of your house at night, and it's like daytime. You don't really notice too much of a difference in so many lights sometimes.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, we used to call it New Hampshire stars because we wouldn't see them in Massachusetts, you know, in the north, you know. The area we lived in, the really populated part, wasn't until you went to the country, so they always called them New Hampshire stars.
It or no streetlights, and it's absolutely amazing at night. But that's another lost art, you know, like, where's the Big Dipper? I couldn't tell you in a million years.
Oh, I know exactly where
now
it
we
is,
have
what time it comes out.
It doesn't work half the time, you know.
Well.
We want to ask Dave UK, how you doing since your surgery, Dave? Everybody wants to know. How you feeling?
He said he was coming along pretty good.
Well, he's having a few issues, I think, but let's see what he tells us. He's feeling better today. Says he's actually looking forward to going back to work. I think maybe that surgery did affect his brain. Oh, he says fine, thanks. Well, good. Yahweh bless you, man.
I want to have so little to do with the medical community. Coming out of the pharmaceutical industry after all those years, I don't know how I did that now looking back. I really don't. I guess I was just ignorant of what I was involved in.
Because you cast your paycheck every couple of weeks.
No, I guess that was it, and it was a good paycheck.
Right.
You know? But the sorcery that goes on in the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry is very, very tremendously great and very convincing, you know. Everyone around you believes it. It's tough not to believe it.
Well, they don't get better. I mean, they stay on pills all their lives. That's just crazy. That whole attitude is crazy.
You know, a lot of the stuff that we sold were we used to call them lifetime medications. It's why we were so generous with samples. You know, we might give a patient, or we'd give a doctor enough to start to give a patient 2, 3, 4 months of a medicine that might cost $150, $200 a month. But the thought was we may have that patient on that drug for 20, 30 years. So what's a couple months up front, you know? I don't know. It was a dirty business. I'm shocked I did it for 19 years. I don't know.
Well, that's the drug deal. First one's free.
No. Yeah, pretty much. That's a good point. You know. And needless to say, the major pharmaceutical companies, every single one of them is Jew-owned, Jew-controlled, and just one more arm of Jews for controlling the world, controlling our race, you know, by drugging them. And that industry generates many, many, many billions of dollars, of course, right into their coffers. So it just fits, it's, you know, one arm of the octopus. And that octopus has got a lot of arms on it, too, by the way.
I was just going to say that there's got to be so many arms on that octopus.
Yeah, that's a crazy, weird, you know, hybrid octopus, just like they are hybrids, you know. But I don't know, brother.
You know, guest Dave has asked, they've recommended that we pray for Dave as a remnant, and they've asked that you lead us in the prayer. So,
I know you were a good
Baptist. He had surgery on his ear. He had a collapsed middle ear, and it developed a fissure, and so they had to do a very invasive surgery on him. And he's not back to work yet. He's still recovering from that.
Okay.
Maybe we can just pray that he'd be, you know, not good as new.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Let's do it.
Okay.
Yahweh, thank you that we've just gathered together tonight in your name, and that we're your holy elect on this earth. And we praise you, Yahweh, that you've called us out of all the chaos in this world. we do bring our brother Dave before you and ask in the name of Yahshua that you would heal him and just make him whole again, Yahweh. Thank you for this brother, and we do ask that you would make him whole and bring him back to full health, that he might serve you in a fuller way. Yahweh, thank you, and we ask this in the name of our Redeemer, Yahshua. Praise you, Yahweh. Amen.
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 If anyone else wants to pray, jump in. If not, we can just continue on fellowshipping.
I think you covered it, Greg.
All right. Amen. Anyway, well, do we want to talk about anything else? We've been on about 2 hours, give or take, given our bumpy start there. I don't know if this storm tonight got talks you all bogged down or not. It took me 20-some minutes to get logged back into the chat room. And even then, I barely got in there, so I don't know.
My computer crashed about an hour ago, but I had no problem getting back in.
Yeah.
It's been fine since.
Well, you know, you've got an awful lot of people in the chat room. It might be if people still want to continue, you might continue on for a little while.
Yeah, I'm not going to hang up. I mean, if anybody wants to talk, let's go. I'm ready. I mean, it's early for me yet. It's only 10 o'clock.
Bill's good for another 3 or 4 hours.
Easy. I got a whole night's work ahead of me yet.
Well, everyone, I need to say goodnight. I need to go study. I'm learning some software, and I'm not as young and mentally agile as I used to be, so I need to go apply myself to this for a while. And so I just want to say, yeah, bless, and I so appreciate the fellowship tonight. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate your persistence, and Bill getting over the technical difficulties tonight. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, Patricia. Thank you.
And just real quick, Patricia, tell the next time you speak to your little friend Christopher,
yeah,
tell him that I have no light on Hawaii on that revolver map, so I know he hasn't been on my site.
Oh, I'm going to get on him, you know, but he may not be online as much because they have a new store down on Front Street now, so he may not be able to sit on the computer like he used to.
I just thought I'd throw that out there. I want to see a light on Hawaii.
Oh, good. I'll bust him. I'll make him do it. Right on, Bill. Take care, everybody.
Have a good evening, Patricia.
I'd like to take just a quick moment and thank all the people in the chat room and the people on call for supporting these Tuesday night programs. Patricia was responsible for getting a bunch of the guys together to do these. I know RP and James and Greg and Bill G. I may leave somebody out. I don't mean to. But we all need your support, and I'm just glad to see so many people supporting these programs. So y'all keep it up.
Amen.
Amen.
I echo that as well. You know, I wasn't sure how these Tuesday programs would work, but they seem to be building. And it just shows me that we all need and desire this fellowship because, you know, it's hard to find any fellowship on a local level sometimes. You know, even though I live in New York, I'm about 3.5 hours from where Bill lives, so it's kind of tough for us to get together. But I'm quite happy for these talk show shows. You know, it's the next best thing, and I'm grateful that we have this opportunity to hook up. It's very good.
And as much as we badmouth technology, it's definitely a good thing, you know, in this instance, even with all of its faults, you know, that all of us can come together this way. And I always think back to when I was originally introduced to Christian Identity many, many years ago. I lived in Idaho for a time and got to know Pastor Butler real well. And I think he would be real pleased with everything that's been going on. I don't know. Every time I check into the discussion forums, I just get a gut feeling that as bad as things may seem, there is a positive light at the end of this tunnel, and that light is getting brighter. I mean, you can look at the chat room right now. More and more people are getting involved. They are waking back up.
Yeah, amen.
Right. There's been a lot of new faces, and a lot of them are from identity groups from elsewhere or were identity before. But I remember when I first started doing these programs with Eli last year, the number of downloads per episode has probably tripled and quadrupled. I checked a recent Sunday episode Eli did, and 598 people, I think, downloaded it.
Really?
And that doesn't include how many people download it from his site, and at least 250 people, 300 people are downloading every one of the weekend episodes Eli and I do together, and that doesn't include all the people that download it from my site, that download it from Eli's site, that download it from I post my programs in Pastor Visser's forum and Covenant People's Ministry forum, and I post my programs in the White National forum run by Pastor Winstead. So there's a lot of exposure. It's really starting to pick up.
It definitely is. It's just amazing to see the direction it is going in. Definitely positive.
Clearly, Yahweh is calling people. His elect in these days, and giving us the means to reach out with fellowship and information and scripture to the hungry elect. So I'm very pleased that these Tuesday programs and all the other programs that we have going. You know, Bill, your thing on Monday night and this on Tuesday. There's other programs and Eli's program on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's no lack of places where we can reach out to and plug in. So that's
very
cool.
Well, the fellowship is important because this is our community. We most of us have absolutely no community outside of this.
Yeah, this is the ecclesia for us, really. You know, at least for me. You know, I don't have a local group. I wish I did. So to me, this is the ecclesia when we get together, our gathering. Very important. So I don't take it lightly.
I think the one good thing about this type of forum, too, looking back in history, there is no one central point for all of this where a group like the ADL, Morris D's, they can zero in on. You know, there's Chicago, New York. It's just down south. They can't pinpoint in on one area. And I think that's definitely a positive moving forward and looking into the future.
Yeah, and we have to. We'll.
In past history, things were, a lot more centralized. Things are a little bit more spread out now. But I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. That we're not concentrated in one area, that's a good thing. But a lot of people seek companionship and brethren nearby, and there just isn't any. It's incredible.
It is. It really is. I'm going to have to get together because I just recently found out Sword Brethren. He and I maybe have about an hour between us, so he's right up there in the Cleveland area, I believe, so.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Yeah. It's Robert, South Carolina.
How you doing, Robert?
Hey, Robert.
A couple friends of mine that are racial. They're not identity, but they are racial.
Well, that's an important first step.
Yeah, because it's really
encouraging me to do genetic testing to see what my ancestry is and where they lived.
I wouldn't worry about it, and this is why I wouldn't worry about it. You know who runs those genetic testing labs?
Yeah, exactly. I know.
You're putting your belief about yourself, you're putting into the hands of the Jews.
Right. They control completely, don't they?
Yes, they do. And not only do they control most of 99% of the biotech industry, but they control the so-called scholarship that it produces. And that's right. The big problem.
Let me ask you this. How far have you been able to trace your ancestry back, or have you even started yet?
No, I haven't done it. But the friend of mine has done it. He's going back to the Vikings and the kings of Scotland and stuff like that. I said, I want to go back even further than that. And he says they don't really go back to Noah or Abraham.
You can't. It's hard. You know, on my mother's side, I could probably trace my I know that I have pictures of my grandmother's upstairs, by the way. She's 91. And I have pictures of her grandparents, all of them. But we can't really go back further than that. And that's bringing us back to the mid-1800s. Now, I have, on my father's side, I could go back 11 generations to the Rhineland in Germany, to the village my ancestors came from. And on my father's mother's side, I can only go back to Ireland, 3 generations. That's it. And that's, you know, I mean, that's probably a lot better than most Americans are going to get.
Oh, I would agree, Bill. I was fortunate enough. I was over at my parents' house one day, and I seen this, looked like it. This was years ago. I seen a real odd-looking book. It was just sitting on top of the refrigerator collecting dust. Well, here it was a family tree book. This was going back to the late 1600s. The bad part of it is it was all in Dutch and Frisian, so I've been slowly trying to decipher that, and yeah, I've gotten back to the late 1600s.
Well, I personally believe that, you know, in Europe, our people were extremely tribal for their whole history in Europe.
Oh, and for even, sure.
Even though there were a lot of, you know, wars and incursions, our people were extremely tribal. And if you can basically get your ancestors off the boat into America, you're probably doing okay.
Yep.
And you probably have nothing to worry about.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And there's no more worrying. And any worrying is vain anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And part of our punishment is the loss of our genealogy and the unsurety that comes with it. Oh, okay? And if you look at my translation... And I can defend my Greek. I'll explain the Greek word for word, case, tense, anything you want. But if you look at my translation in Timothy, I think it is, it might take me a minute to find this because I don't remember where it is.
While you're looking that up, though, I would agree with you, though, to the gentleman that was asking about genetic testing. I would avoid that because what you said is correct. It's Jew run, it's Jew operated. And again, with that being said, any results you get back, you would have to question the validity of them.
I'm sorry, it's Titus. Now, in Titus 1:4, my New Testament reads, "To Titus, a purely bred child according to the common belief." And that's, I would attest that that's exactly what the Greek says. And I would say that Paul said that because Titus was a Greek. And Titus, being a Greek, had no idea of his genealogy, like most of the Greeks at the time. However, if you could look at a man who doesn't, you know, have any indication that he's mixed and accepts the word and believes the, you know, especially the two seed line ideology, that definitely divides the wheat from the chaff. And that's not the only yardstick. You know, I wouldn't say that that every pure Adamite is definitely going to accept two seed line right off the bat. That's, you can't say that. It takes a long time, and it takes a lot of knowledge to be able to see two seed line. But if you believe two seed line and you believe yourself to be pure, there's no other yardstick. And you believe in Yahshua Christ and his redemption, and the scope of the covenants, the proper scope of the covenants, I believe that's your best yardstick. And
I agree.
I wouldn't put my fate and my belief in who I am in the hands of the Jews. That's for damn sure.
I agree, brother.
Definitely.
If you believe in Yahweh and trust in the covenant, and, you know, I mean, that is what it is. if Yahweh is calling you into this, you call on Yahweh. You have that inner witness that when you call on his name, you sense Yahweh's presence. I mean,
I believe that part of the punishment was that none of us would have a guarantee that we're pure. And that's part of the punishment. That's it's clear that we lost our genealogies for that reason. But that we cannot brag in the flesh, as Paul states. And that's the clear message of the Gospels. By their fruits you shall know them.
Yeah. And race mixing was almost unknown until this generation anyway.
Well, right. When, you know, for hundreds of years or for thousands of years in Europe, you were expected to marry a girl from your village or a girl from the area that was from your tribe, basically.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that was
this whole race mixing culture is a fairly recent phenomenon. Yeah, at least, you know, for our race. Of course, Jews have been mixing their race for millennia, but our race has been fairly pure up until just, you know, this recent generation, you know, and now we really see the final push. One of the major weapons being used against us is race mixing, and we see that from multiple angles.
Right, and from historically, you know, I could show that the Romans had laws governing who could marry who. They didn't just allow people to intermarry from different tribes. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the Greeks, and here's an example I use all the time. Cyrus, the Persian king, is called a man of gold by Isaiah. However, Herodotus called him a mule. And Herodotus called him a mule because his mother was a Median princess and his father was a Persian nobleman. But but to the Greeks, that was a mule. Because he had a mother who was from the tribe of the Medes and a father who was from the tribe of the Persians. So that's how racist the Greeks were. And Strabo actually marveled about Alexandria in Egypt and a couple other cities in Egypt, and he said that they were the only cities where people from multiple races inhabited the same city. People from multiple tribes inhabited the same city. Because throughout Greek history, it was only normal for one tribe to inhabit any town.
Yeah.
And if you were an Athenian, you were expected to marry an Athenian. And if you were a Spartan, you were expected to marry a Spartan. And if you didn't, your kids were considered bastards, no matter how white both parties were. And that attitude pervaded in Europe, amongst all the Germanic tribes for centuries and centuries.
Yeah, it's only recently that our race has been assaulted by race mixing to the point where it is now, where it's so acceptable to
right. It's Jewish propaganda that started in the 1800s.
Yeah,
it's part of the communist, part of the communist manifesto is to dissolve all national borders.
Mm-hmm.
And the communist manifesto actually recognizes that capitalism was already dissolving those borders, but they hoped to accelerate the problem, or to us it's a problem. To them it's a cause of joy.
Yeah. Hey Bill, let me say something. I'm going to have to sign off. I've got a couple issues I have to take care of. I just want to thank everybody for participating tonight, and I certainly enjoyed once we got past the technical problems early on the fellowship tonight. And I enjoy doing these Tuesday nights and just being with all the brothers and sisters in Yahweh.
Greg?
Yes.
Great to meet you. This is Brett in Alabama. I know a gentleman who grew up in the Baptist ministry, and he is struggling to separate himself from worldly things, television, video games, movies, and but I know he's special because he should be least in the kingdom of heaven, and he recognizes his identity. He introduced me to identity. Okay,
really? Yeah.
and he's still afraid to let go of all that.
Well, that's someone you have to pray for, because if they really see this, it will be easy to let go of that stuff. It will drop away from you, because you'll understand that it's of the Jew. It's of the enemy of Yahweh. And, you know, you'll be repulsed by those things when you really see the origin of them.
Well, he hates the Baptist belief system. He hates it. but the thing is that his dad's a Baptist preacher, and he grew up in it.
That makes it a little tougher, I see. You know, but I mean, once people really see clearly the racial component of the elect, you know, being of the elect is not strictly a matter of faith. It's the main part of it is a racial heritage, and that's so clear in the Word. Once you see, of course, you know, nobody teaches that but us, but it's right there in the Bible from A to Z, and in the apocryphal literature, it's all over the place.
And I think possibly one thing that's hurting him from proceeding with identity and releasing from the world is that he has tried so hard to get his parents to see identity, and they won't do it.
Yeah, well, this faith is certainly a matter of revelation. You don't figure this out and become this. Yahweh has to open your eyes to this.
Right, absolutely. All the knowledge in the world doesn't...
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yahweh doesn't open your eyes, and I've been through it 1,000 times. And if I mean, I don't want to boast, but if I can't explain it to anybody, they're lost. I'm sorry.
You know, I
can talk about the history until I'm blue in the face to somebody that doesn't believe it, and they're still not going to believe it. And I could walk them through the entire Bible, and they're still not going
to
get it.
But it was great to finally meet you, Greg, because me and Bill, we talk, and he mentioned you because I mentioned the Book of Enoch, how awesome it is, and so he mentioned you. And
Greg, you guys got a lot in common with that Book of Enoch. I know. If there was one copy and you two were in a cell, you'd have to fight.
Well, I think we'd figure it out. But anyway,
I see little pieces all over the floor.
Anyway, brothers, I'm going to sign off. I enjoyed tonight. Praise Yahweh, and we'll hook up again soon.
Take care, Greg.
God bless.
Amen.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
Don't everybody get quiet all at once.
Yeah.
You know, Bill, as much as I hate to say it, I have to sign off, too. I've got a ton of homework ahead of me tonight.
That's okay. That's understandable.
I start my externship tomorrow. I get to go to your favorite city in Ohio, Youngstown.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, I heard that St. Elizabeth's Hospital up there was an excellent hospital.
Well, that's where I'm heading to. So
I heard that was a great hospital, and a buddy of mine had a stroke in prison, and he came back raving about that hospital.
It's a really good. It's not just St. Elizabeth's. There's a.
What a shame to waste such a good hospital on that city.
It really is. There's a lot of. Just a lot of good people down there. I'm using it right now to make some contacts. You know, the more I look into it, and my wife as well, I do think we're heading over to Pennsylvania eventually.
Pennsylvania's not, you know, it's not the state it was 20 years ago.
No. Just looking, we want to stay in the immediate area, just because of family, and there's a lot of areas over there that we've visited that are 97-98% white.
Well, yeah, northern central Pennsylvania is you know, it's great as far as demographics, but I mean it's still far behind New York in taxes, but it's coming up.
Oh, without a doubt. No, I know, and again, we're still looking into this real closely. We're doing our homework, so it's not etched in stone. You know, I may.
Yeah, well, Michigan's definitely out of the question. I'm sure about that.
I'm not too fond of Michigan. We'll see. I'm not like I said, we're doing our homework on this, and it's an exciting time. It's a new chapter in my life, and it's an exciting time, and it's just good to be amongst, you know, a lot of good brothers and sisters, and you know, like everybody else has said tonight, I'm very thankful for this. It's I only see this, continuing. I hate to say to get bigger, because I think it's a question of, like anything else of value, quality over quantity. But I do see more of our brothers and sisters coming back. Unfortunately, it's taken things to get as bad as they have.
I think things are going to have to get a lot worse.
I agree with you, Bill, and I'm trying to keep in mind what you said, too, about, fear-mongering, but I agree with you. I do believe things are going to get worse, and it's like I hinted at earlier. I think people are going to have to go hungry a little bit.
That'll wake them up. I mean, no beer and no football will make them start to think a little.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to sign off. Good evening, everybody, and thank you.
Take care. Great talking.
And I will be back on next time we meet.
Great. See you, Brian.
Yahweh bless.
Take care. Yahweh bless. RP left. I said something about Michigan and RP left. I feel bad now. Well, Michigan has, it has a big problem with Detroit. It's a huge problem, and it's a money sewer, and it's houses. I actually saw a real live real estate site a couple of weeks ago from a real estate broker in Michigan. I went through it in a couple of browsers just because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Houses for $15. You could buy a house in Detroit for $15. I mean, it has no pipes and no fixtures, and you probably can't go out at night, or you probably can't stay in at night either. You better sleep with a shotgun and a couple of pistols or something. No, it's crazy, but yeah, houses are for $15. I couldn't believe it.
Y'all got sweet tea up here in New York, Bill.
Well, what is it about you rednecks and sweet tea?
That's the water. It's the water down here. Sweet tea is that's all we drink.
Right, Pilgrim. That's what they are. They're stripped down nigger shells. That's what those houses are. But a house for $15? I mean, a big yard and a big brick house or whatever. It's crazy. And you don't Yeah, you're right. You can't stay in it. You can't fix it. They'll just come steal it again. But it'd be a good investment. I mean, you hold on to it for a few years. They got to lure them away with something. I mean, the niggers are going to have to leave Detroit sooner or later. They can't. There isn't even a supermarket in Detroit anymore. It's crazy. They can't even keep the supermarket there because they just steal it blind.
You know, I got knocked out of the chat room again, and I'm now trying to access TalkShoe off the internet, and it will not open.
Oh.
I can open other sites, but the TalkShoe will not open.
That reminds me, Bill, your one of your websites, and I don't know if it's on my end or your end, and then that's why I'm mentioning it to you, see if you've heard other complaints other than mine. It didn't work too well. The .org, Christiano.org/site. Site, I think.
That's my main site, Christiania. That's my main site. What about it? I'm looking at it right now.
No, it's just here on the computer here, the internet here. It doesn't work all the time. It crashes. I go to your site and
my
and
site never crashes.
No,
I
no,
your sweet tea. My site works fine.
Okay, all right.
I can't. I mean, nobody else has complained to me.
Okay.
I know I get little quirky things here and there, like a video not working or something like that that I fixed. But I mean, nobody else complains about the site not working.
Okay. All right.
But then again, you know, I've had things broke for weeks that I never noticed, and when I found them myself, I scratched my head how nobody else ever found them and said anything, you know.
I'm about to be the first one to post on your user blog. I'm about to be the first one.
Well, you should be the second, but you have to sign up for it and get approved first.
I did. I did sign up for it.
Well, then I should get a notice in the mail to... I do have an administrator for it, but I never he's never had anything to do except once. I'll go look at it later to see if you signed up for it and approve you.
I keep getting magazines and postcards from this this store that is specialized in little girl clothes, and I've called them 3 times.
Oop, Brett's cell phone died. Now I'm all here all by myself. Yeah, Peter, Linux works a lot more smoothly, but the crashing on TalkShoe is because of it's almost always caused by the Adobe Flash Player. There's some kind of conflict with TalkShoe's programming and the Adobe Flash Player. And I would more tend to believe it's probably TalkShoe, but it's free, so how could we complain about it? Well, if nobody calls in, I'm going to end the call because I can't sit here and talk to myself. I do enough programs. Yeah, I have a Linux, and I have two Linux installations, but I don't get to spend the time with it that I would like to. If they give money to Africans to rebuild Detroit, the result is going to be dung huts. Ah, come on, Sword. I mean, it's only 10:30. I mean, we could squeeze another half hour out of it, maybe. I was just going to go to a website, and I forget which one it was, so I can't go. Oh, that's it, my user blog, the Christogenia user blog. Only one I've had this a user blog posted for 6 months now, and I put it up at the request of 3 or 4 people, and only one person has posted an article to it. And I put it up on June 23rd. So, what's up, Sword?
Not much. How are you doing?
I don't know why you dialed in and you were muted, but South California dialed in and was not muted. And I have unmute all checked. That's fine. TalkShoe has some quirks.
I had a conversation with a Baptist earlier tonight, and he basically was saying to a guy that's concerned about the environment that he doesn't care what happens with the environment of the world since it'll be 60, 70 years out and he'll be dead. And then the guy pointed out, what about your kid? And he said, well, he'll go to heaven when he's dead, so who cares about, you know, something that's going to happen in 60 years possibly. And then he said that he just doesn't really care what happens with the world.
Most people don't care what happens tomorrow as long as they got beer in a football game tonight. That's the attitude. It's crazy.
But I've noticed that theirs is a salvation by belief. Since they believe they're saved, And when someone said, what if you're wrong? And he said, well, I die and go to heaven. Well, no, I mean, what if you're wrong about that? They never have an answer.
Right. They don't really have a firm foundation for their faith, do they? That's the case with most Christians. And that's why Christianity has become
a laughing stock.
Very easily. Yeah, it's a laughing stock, and it's very easily corrupted in the minds of people because they don't have a foundation.
All those people in Matthew 7 that went to the Messiah and said, Lord, Lord, look what we've done in your name, they thought they were saved, and he said, depart from me.
Right, and that's the example. That's all these people that don't have a wedding garment, right?
Mm-hmm. Or the 10 virgins, 5 were foolish, and they were told, I know you not.
And they were virgins, so they were Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And I characterize them as the mainstream idiots waiting for the rapture.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I respect these people in regards to that they're doing their jobs and career-wise. They're nice, they're pretty decent, but theologically I don't want to have any discussions with them when they start talking about 144,000 Jews that are going to bear witness to the truth as the rapture is going on and the Antichrist is trying to rule over the world. And it's just like, what Bible are they reading? It's like, I have no common ground with them.
Let me address guest 28, because guest 28 says that a lack of prayer for our Israelite remnant brethren in these broadcasts is not acceptable to me. We are true Israel, which is correct, and Yahweh expects prayer. Well, how does Jesus Christ tell us to go to pray? How does Yahshua Christ tell us to go pray? The purpose of these gatherings to me is learning, the dissemination of information, and fellowship. And we're told to go in our bedrooms and pray, to go in our closets and pray. And I pray all the time, but you don't see me pray because I have no false pretense of piety.
We're told to not be as the hypocrites who trumpet their voice and lift it up in the street corner.
Exactly. And public prayer leads to false pretenses of piety. And there are times and places for it, and sometimes it's useful. But I'm not going to make a habit out of it because I have no false pretense of piety. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. Go in your closet and pray.
But I mean, if you wanted to, you or I, we could go on for probably half an hour with an eloquent, long-winded prayer, and it would do nothing other than leave people thinking, wow, Brian and Bill, they sure can pray. And
yeah,
that's
right.
Not our goal.
And then I'll be like Joel Osteen. I'll be an asshole.
Well, he's a Jew, eh?
And
it's the truth. It's the dead truth. I'm not here to pray. I pray all the time in private. I'm here to learn. I'm here to have fellowship. I'm here to teach what I can when I can, and that's the purpose why I'm here.
Sorry about the phone situation there, my man.
Thank you, Peter. Osteen is a Canaanite, but public prayer is not a prerequisite for Christianity. When Yahshua Christ himself tells us, go in your closet and pray. That's what he said. That's the gospel, guest 28. That's the scripture. You're going to contend with it?
It looks like he's contending with it. I mean,
yeah,
sure.
Well, let him contend, but he's not contending with me.
Where it is.
Well, I could find a scripture in a minute. I mean, I got Bible works in the search engine. Spreading the word. The word of the truth is important.
Matthew,
and that's what's primary, and then you go pray in your room.
And if he wants to say anything, shouldn't it suffice him to just say, Yahweh, let your will be done, amen?
Exactly.
I mean, what more is there?
Exactly. That's the whole Our Father. How do we pray? They asked the apostle. That's right. How do we pray? What's he got? 6 lines there, 5 lines.
Well, Matthew 6:6 is one of them.
We should all pray consistently for the will of Yahweh to be done in the earth. And that's basically the only valid prayer. Because what we need, we don't know what we need, but the Spirit knows.
And if you're praying for anything
else. And Yahweh knows what we need.
If you're praying for anything else, you're praying for what you want rather than what he wants for you.
Exactly.
You know, it's like some people use him as Santa Claus. You know, dear Yahweh, I want a new car. Dear Yahweh, I want this.
Yeah, right. It's incredible. So I'm not one for prayer. So criticize me for that. but go read your Bible. That's the bottom line. I know the Greek. I'm in a situation right now where I know the Greek word, but I don't know the English word that I'm looking for. But Bible verse doesn't. It isn't really amicable to searching in Greek.
So how would you handle Baptists and evangelicals? Basically, I don't even want to get into a theological debate with them since we're not on the same level in terms of scriptural knowledge or understanding or appreciation of history. Some of them have even said they don't care about history since history means nothing. And they say that they're taking it on faith. One, I think an agnostic tried to tell them that you can't prove the Bible. And he said, well, I'm taking it on faith. And I pointed out that archaeology and history and everything backs all this up. Anyone who reads Enoch will then realize the archaeological evidence of the giants and how it's been suppressed. I mean, with the evangelicals, basically, they don't know this. They don't care. So there's really no common ground for any sort of discussion, is there?
None whatsoever. It's hard to contact them. It's you have to start by questioning. You know, a good place to start is by asking them questions and asking them why society is so screwed up. And asking them how they reconcile God and football.
Well, they think
how they reconcile God and pornography.
They think we're blessed. And one of them, when I asked who was Cain's wife, they actually have the gall to either say they don't know and that it doesn't matter, or they say that he was incestuous with his mother or an unstated sister.
Ask them to define faith. That's a good place to start. Guess 28, I got something for you. Matthew 6:6. But when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father, which is in secret, and thy Father, which is seeth thee in secret, shall reward thee openly. There. If you contend with that, that's on you.
And we're told not to use vain repetitions. Isn't that what the Catholics do with the rosary?
That's exactly what they do. I'm not one for public prayer, and I never have been. And I believe that it's... That's spiritual, too.
And, you know, I was brought up Catholic, and we had to go make our confession, and I'm thinking of, you know, what have I done? And I actually had to think. I had to think for several minutes to come up with something to confess to this crazy priest, since in my mind, I've kept the commandments. I hadn't done anything, and I'm just trying to think of I'm going to be embarrassed if I get up here and I tell him I haven't done anything.
Right. Yeah, you know, a real good example for prayer is Paul. When they're floating around the Mediterranean, shipwrecked, you know, useless in these tempestuous storms, there's nothing they could do to save themselves. Did Paul of Tarsus lead a prayer group? No. What did he do? He admonished the men in the boat to eat, and he lifted up the bread and praised Yahweh and thanked Yahweh for the bread, which is, you know, we should always do because he provides for us. And they ate, and that's all he did. 14 days floating down around the Mediterranean, lost, and Paul of Tarsus didn't start a prayer group. So, today's evangelicals and Baptists would have really scolded him for that, wouldn't they? I'll wait for an answer, 28.
Anyway, then, so the priest then says, you know, go and say, like, what it was, 30 Hail Marys or 20 Our Fathers, and you're good to go. I mean, did they have a point system prescribed by the Vatican? You know, if someone steals a candy bar, it's 5 Hail Marys. If they cheat on a test, it's 10 Hail Marys.
I pray all the time in my mind, and that's what's important. And God knows that you're there and you're praying, and that your mind, your thoughts are centered on Him. That is what's important.
Brian Winston says, pray that.
And this is about fellowship. If I wanted to pray, I'd just start a recording. Go upstairs and watch TV. Thank you, Peter. That's what church is about.
And I noticed the evangelicals, mainly
pray
the Pentecostals.
Pray in your thoughts, pray in your heart, pray in your bed.
The Pentecostals and Baptists, they seem very big on public, open, overt prayer, don't they? They're ostentatious.
Because it's all in pretense. Exactly. They're ostentatious. That's a good one. I like that one. You didn't get that, did you?
Oh, yes. Making a reference to Ulstein, right?
Yeah. They're ostentatious.
And I've even seen a few of them. There was one Pentecostal preacher in Canada, tattooed and pierced, wearing a biker jacket, and he would shout, "Be healed in the name of Jesus," and then kick someone in the face or punch them in the face.
28, I pray for my brethren in the world constantly.
I think most of those people, they're just looking for an ego trip, aren't they?
Well, yeah, it even if your initial meaning is not, it is sincere. I mean, your meaning can be sincere, but it always leads to acts of pretense. It always does. There's no way around it. You always get the ego involved in certain people, and they have to put on this act that they're holier than somebody else. And I'd rather just kick them down the stairs. That'll wake them up.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have something to pray for.
Well, for instance, you know, the Pharisees and Sadducees, the modern rabbis, I once had a Jew tell me that the power and authority of a rabbi comes from the congregation's perception of his knowledge of the Talmud and how well he's memorized it. Should that be the basis of authority, how well you memorize a book, or should it be how well you can explain it, understand it, and digest it?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I've had that contention with Christians all my life. You know, I'm not real good at telling you chapter and verse. I mean, I knew this guy in prison. You could tell him Jeremiah 32:28, and he could repeat it. And then I'd ask him, well, now do you know the story? What's the story? They didn't know the story. Well, all the guys I knew that could memorize chapter and verse and just spit them out like a jukebox pressing C4, and he'd play that tune, and they didn't know the story. And I like to think that I know more about the story, and you know, I got Bible works here, and I could put a word in and find it no problem.
But it's like somebody that can tell you where every little component part of the tractor was made, but they don't know how to operate the tractor.
What did Christ tell the Pharisees? He said, he didn't tell the Pharisees, go check out Isaiah 53:2. He told them, search the scriptures. This is what it says. And the rest was on them. I'm not anti-prayer. Now you just turned yourself into an asshole. That's what you just did. I said, pray in your mind, pray in your heart, and go pray in your bed. You missed everything I said about prayer, and you missed everything I said about pretense, because you are probably an evangelical or a Baptist or a Catholic that wants to drag that bullshit into CI, and that's the reason why we have all this division in CI, because nobody wants to make their mind like a little child and start from scratch and learn from scratch. Go learn from the book. I just repeated Matthew 6:6 to you. I think you're just an idiot. Now you can't type no more. There, you want to piss me off? Call in. You got some balls. Hide behind an anonymous guest number. You just made a fool out of yourself. He is a Pentecostal, Peter. He must be. You know, people bring in, they learn identity and they come to identity. You really have to start from scratch. And you have to base your beliefs on Scripture. And you can't contend with Scripture.
They bring a lot of baggage with them.
He wants to judge me because I'm not up here playing Billy Graham. The hell with Billy Graham and the hell with him.
So you don't think for a pretense we should make a long prayer?
Tell me about it.
And maybe we'll shout, holy, holy, holy.
It's all pretense. It leads to pretense. If you know, I outdid Greg Howard. I made a better prayer than he did, and next week Eli James's turn. And no, that don't work. We're here for learning and fellowship, and this is our communion, and this is our forum, and that's it.
It's not a contest.
No, it's not a contest. And if you want to pray, go to sleep. Go to lay in your bed and pull the covers up. And that's what the book says, right? We should even change the subject.
Bill.
Yes.
All right. I thought I was muted.
Not yet. This ain't a democracy. Go start your own call. You want to pray? Go on. I'm sorry. What's up? I thought you were
No. I just thought I was muted. That's all. When you were talking, I was saying some stuff, and I guess I wasn't heard, not because I wasn't muted, not because I was muted, but because everybody else was talking. But that's all right. Never mind. Oh, sorry about the phone doing what it did the other night. Making a racket.
Okay, I have no idea what you're saying, but that's all right.
Oh, that horrible hissing sound.
Ah, yeah, the racket. Yeah, you might not have heard it. I don't know.
Oh, no, I heard it.
Oh. No, I was in my bill, might not have heard it. I don't know. Yeah, well, that's...
Yeah, it did do that. It made the horrible noise when the battery died, and I muted you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, you know, you're only muted for the life of that phone call.
Yeah.
Because everybody that dials in is automatically unmuted.
All right.
Or at least, I don't, somebody, Sword Brethren dialed in and he didn't get automatically unmuted. I don't know, must not like him. So what's happening? We got to talk about something. I mean, we can't sit here and stare and wonder when guest 28 is going to give up and leave or something.
Where do these people get the idea of the 144,000 being
Pilgrims
Jews?
Pilgrims typing periods.
I mean,
where does it ever say anything about the 144,000 being Jews?
They're out of every tribe of Israel, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people, most mainstream Christians, they confuse all Israel with Jews.
Yeah.
It's incredible how Jews got these evangelicals to memorize the entire Bible, and they still don't know the story. And how could you think Abraham was a Jew? Peter, I did get an email about the church fathers. I'm going to be honest with you. I got over 500 emails in my inbox.
I remember
seeing an email about the church fathers. And I really have to... there it is. Okay. Now I know who you are, because I didn't have Peter Lou matched up to anybody, really. You know, I have that LeBronix Logos Bible software that somebody got for me, and that's actually pretty good, and I search the early Christian writers quite often in that, but they there's a lot of things that they didn't have right. I mean, the prophecy had to be fulfilled, and Israel had to be blind, and the kingdom of heaven had to be like a net with some bad kinds in it. If all these things weren't, if the church fathers had it straight, All those prophecies would have never been fulfilled.
So if somebody has made the fundamental error of thinking the Israelites are Jews, their entire worldview is going to be tainted and corrupt.
Right. The church fathers spent a lot of time, too. They spent a lot of time addressing the fallacies of Greek philosophy.
What's wrong with Greek philosophy?
Well, they had, they were actually into metaphysics, and they had a lot of wild ideas about how the things came into being. I mean, some Greek philosophers, even evolution is a Greek philosophy, you know.
I mean, do you tend to agree with most of what Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates said about virtue and truth?
I have not read Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates about virtue and truth. I haven't. All of my reading in the Greek classics is in the histories and the poets.
Okay.
And I can scratch the surface with Aristotle. I could explain the difference between the Aristotelian worldview and that of Eratosthenes, who knew that the earth was a globe, by the way, where it's Aristotle that thought it was flat. Yeah, I never read that Judas Scepter. I've heard of it, but I never got it. Martin Luther, I don't think he understood two-seed line. I haven't read anything that indicated that he did. He did know the Jews were evil,
yeah,
but he learned that through their actions. He didn't learn it through the scripture.
He originally tried to minister to them and convert them,
right,
but they basically scoffed him and slapped him down. So then he finally came back with the idea, which he summed up with a quote, "Were I to baptize a Jew, I would take him to a bridge over the Elbe River, tie a stone around his neck, and push him off the side." That's basically the only way you baptize a Jew, wouldn't you say?
Well, that would be the only logical way. You can't baptize a Jew. It's not possible.
That character that called in last night, I had the distinct idea that he was a Marano.
He sure as hell sounded like it.
I got the idea that he was a Puerto Rican Jew or something of that sort.
I'm looking at the users on the Christogenia Reader's blog. And Brett did not.
I haven't yet.
Oh, yes, you did register for this.
Yeah,
blog.
I registered, but I haven't posted yet.
Okay. Who approved you?
Nobody. I don't think. That's what I'm waiting for. That's why I haven't posted
it
yet.
You were approved from before the foundation of the world.
Well, yeah, there's somebody else. I mean, the guy that is supposed to be keeping an eye on this might be doing it. Because evidently you're down as a contributor. He must have done it. Imagine that. Okay. Yeah, that's the right place. You found the right place anyway.
Yeah. I posted to your forum twice, which I told you about that. It got like 5 reads and no replies.
Yeah, I haven't. I spent a little time on the forum yesterday, but not half the time that I wanted to. And hopefully I'll get there. I don't think I'm going to. I got a lot to do this week. I don't think I'm going to get there until Sunday, maybe. I hate to say it.
All right, someone in the chat said that Calvin was a Canaanite named Cohen. Have you heard that before, Bill?
I've heard it before. I've never seen it substantiated. But I'll say this about Calvin. He's the only one of the reformers that accepted usury.
Mm.
All the German reformers rejected usury, and Calvin thought it was okay. Now, something's up with that. I'm sorry.
Mm.
Because usury is definitely anti-Christian and anti-scriptural.
And he was incredibly authoritarian, too, wasn't he?
Page 20, Cars, Pawns, and the Game. Thank you. You know, I posted that book on Clifton's site, but I haven't read it. I haven't had time to read much. I'm starting Jordanus' History of the Goths, and I got Apollonius Rhodius upstairs lined up. That's going to be my next read.
Nope, guest 28 left, and he has returned as guest 29.
Yeah. Yeah, I read A. Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand and The New World Order. The Unseen Hand was an excellent book. And I read Rodney Stitch, Defrauding America. And I read about a year's worth of Spotlights, and that was it for my conspiracy reading. Oh, and I read one more. I read that Myron Fagan, The Illuminati. And When I decided to start reading the classics and studying Greek, I gave up all the conspiracy reading. Because you just can't do everything. It's just not possible. Guest 26, Pawns in the Game, that William Guy Carr book, it's on a PDF on Clifton Emmerhauser's website. And if you give me a minute, I will get the URL for you. and put it up in the forum.
Brian, is that your name, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm still trying to remember everybody's name.
There it is. That's
Patricia.
Pawns in the game.
Patricia, Brian, James, and then everybody else that I know. I mean, well, I know Bill, Clifton, Eli, Gerald.
And that's funny. The version I got up there doesn't have any page numbers, but I'm going to have to search for Calvin. Once the revolution had been decided on, the Jewish plotters introduced Calvinism into England to split church and state and divide the people. Contrary to general belief, Calvinism is of Jewish origin. It was deliberately conceived to split the adherents of the Christian religions and divide the people. Calvin's real name was Cohen. When he went from Geneva to France to start preaching his doctrine, he became known as C-A-U-I-N. I would want to pronounce that Cowan. Then in England it became Calvin. And that's the difference in the pronunciation of the U. History proves that there is hardly a revolutionary plot that wasn't hatched in Switzerland. There is hardly a Jewish revolutionary leader who hasn't changed his name. Well, we know that. At the B'nai B'rith celebrations in Paris, France, in 1936, Calvin, whatever his name may have been, was enthusiastically acclaimed to have been of Jewish descent. This fact was commented upon in the Catholic Gazette of February 1936 as a footnote. So there you have it. That's William Guy Carr, Pawns in the Game. And Clifton... Clifton recommends to everybody that, I mean, he strongly recommends that book. He said that's basically the book that woke him up.
On Jewishpedia, it says that his ideas contributed to the rise of capitalism and representative democracy in the West.
Yeah, well, that's two destructive forces.
And individualism.
Well, his acceptance of usury would... you know, that would contribute to Jewish capitalism, of course.
Have you seen his portrait? He looks like a Sephardic, doesn't he?
I've seen, you know, small black and gray and white portraits of him, but I never paid him much mind.
Are you close to Bill, Brian?
Hmm?
Are you close to Bill?
State I'm probably 6 or 7 hours away.
Oh, all right.
Wouldn't you say, Bill?
Yeah, it'd take my parents about 6 hours to get to Elkton from here.
I'm in Alabama, I guess.
Maybe seven. 6 to 7, depending on stops and gas.
Is it just us three? See, I don't have the internet screen, the chat screen, so I don't know. You know, I hear me, Bill, and Brian, and that's.
Well, there are 10 people in the program. Ten others. Yeah, Peter. They've really been perverting Christianity for a long time now.
So you got to get me in, too.
Look at Benny Hinn and who's that other clown, Brian? Who's that other popular Jewish evangelical preacher, isn't there?
Tony Alamo.
Tony Alamo and Benny Hinn. That's just incredible. That's just blatant. Satan preaching to the assembly of God.
Yeah.
That's
you know,
crazy.
Tony Alamo was born Bernie Lazar Hoffman.
They know that it's a big, you know, it's a way to make a nice, comfortable living. They know that. Yeah. All right. They're great actors. It's a natural for them.
Tony Alamo's marriage is first marriage. Helen Hagen, second. Susan Alamo, maiden name not given. Third, Brigetta Olenhammer. Fourth, Elizabeth Amrein. And it says that his parents were Romanian Jews. Let's see. He converted to evangelical Christianity when he was 9 years old.
Brian, I don't know if you caught my question last night. I asked about Howard Hughes. You know anything about Howard Hughes, Brian?
He was very eccentric, yet intelligent and innovative.
No. I mean, was
he wants to know if he was a kike.
I would say no.
I didn't think he was, but I never really, I don't care about Howard Hughes.
He brought in a lot of Mormons to help him manage his money, since he said Mormons were trustworthy and he didn't want normal bankers and lawyers and such.
Yeah.
Yes, he did do that, yeah.
Although I imagine
he never ended up with little boys in his bed like Michael Jackson.
And even if someone was a Jewish elitist, they probably wouldn't want Jewish accountants working for them because they would know what they're capable of.
Yes, 26. Hoffman's a good German name. It's another name that the Jews polluted and stole.
Yeah, but Tony Alamo's middle name was Lazar, and his first name was Bernie. I've never heard of any German with the name Lazar, have you?
Oh, no, that's definitely a Jewish name, Lazar. It's actually a big Jewish name. It's the name of a big, one of those big yuppie department stores, too, I think, in New York. Yeah, the most beautiful girl I ever knew in my childhood, her name was Anne Hoffman, red hair and freckles. She never wanted anything to do with me. Lucky her.
Marquez Day, and I may be pronouncing this wrong, but... Marquis de Sade, Marquis de Sade,
Marquis de Sade.
Yeah, he was. Tell me, he was a Jew.
I believe he was.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of those perverse nobles were actually Jews.
Have you ever seen any movement the Jews didn't try to infiltrate?
Not really. No. They have to control everything.
Well, I think I'm going to call it a night. What do you guys think? I'm about talked out. Tomorrow is my day off from sitting here and talking on the phone for 2 hours.
We could start singing or praying.
Yeah.
Wait. Wait, that reminds me of something. I know there are people, and again, I mean, this is I'm coming from the Baptist point of view. There's people who that I know who are going to go into the ministry of music, and I always question them about that ministry of what? What? How are you going to minister with music? How exactly are you going to do that? I just laugh at that. I think that's so retarded.
It works for a couple of people, but I there's no ministry of music. There might be somebody that can. Well, we need good propaganda. There is no doubt we have no decent propaganda, and music is good propaganda. If you could get somebody to put the message across correctly in music.
Ooh, and here we go. The Marquis de Sade, of course, his name gave rise to sadism. And then where does masochism come from? Leopold von Sacher-Masoch. It says he was born a nobleman in Austria-Hungary. He learned German at age 12, which begs the question of what language he was speaking prior to that. And he was doubtlessly. And it says that he was raised Roman Catholic. So how could you be raised Roman Catholic yet not know a word of German in Austria-Hungary?
Well, he may have been a Slav.
Hmm.
That's a possibility.
With the name Leopold von Sacher-Masoch? Leopold's not a Slavic name.
Yeah, 26. Thanks. I was trying to come up with his name, and I just couldn't. I've heard him a few times. Pastor Dan plays him all the time. I think
oh,
he said his website once, too. Carl Klein.
Here's more about Sacher Masoch. He published articles calling for tolerance for all Jews, emancipation of women, women's education, suffrage. He worked against local anti-Semitism. Through
well, okay, maybe it was Yiddish. Maybe his mother was a Jew, and his father was a Slav. I don't know. I'd have to look at his name.
This is the kicker. In 1869, Sacher Masoch and his mistress, Baroness Fanny Pister, that's actually her name, signed a contract making him her slave for a period of 6 months. This guy's got to be a Jew.
Yeah, well, he has all the hallmarks. That's okay, guys, I'm going to call it tonight. God bless, and thanks for putting up with our whims. And
oh, okay, here's the ultimate kicker. I scrolled down onto Wikipedia, and it says, Jews and Judaism in Austria, Austrians of, quote, Ukrainian descent, converts to Catholicism. There we have it.
There you have it. Okay, I'm going to go.
All right, Yahweh bless.
Praise Yahweh, and may Yahweh bless you all, and thanks for listening. Jason, it's good to see you, and I'll be here Friday with Eli James on Christogenos, 8 p.m. Take care.